Okay. All right. Here he comes now.
Sorry, I confused him. Told him I wasn't coming when I showed up. That's cool.
All right, I think we're ready to roll. Good morning, and welcome to the March 23rd, 2023 City of Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals. This is a quasi-judicial proceeding. All those wishing to give testimony during these proceedings will please sign in, and witnesses will be sworn in prior to giving testimony. All proceedings of the Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals are recorded. Decisions of this board are final. Challenges to the decisions of the Savannah ZBA must be filed through the Superior Court of Chatham County. If you have any cell phones or noise-making devices, please silence them at this time. And if you will, join me for the Pledge of Allegiance and the prayer. Father, we just thank you for this beautiful day, and Lord, for just the privilege of living here in this city. Father, I ask that you give us wisdom and understanding to hear these cases and make right decisions. And Lord, just thank you for your presence. Father, I ask your blessings on our city and on the people who live here. And I ask you to please strengthen every marriage and every family in Savannah. In Jesus' name, amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right, before we go any further, if you plan on giving testimony or speaking here today, if you will, please stand and repeat after me. Raise your right hand. I solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me God. Thank you. All right, we have one item that's been requested to be continued until the next meeting. And that would be the variance request for 213 West 39th Street, file number 23-000986-ZBA, dwelling unit count and parking variance. Do I have a motion to continue this to the next meeting?
I so moved.
Second.
All right, Mrs. Jones has made a motion to continue this to the next meeting. It is seconded by Mr. Plunk. Mr. Plunk, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Aye.
And Mrs. Jones?
Aye.
Okay, motion passes and this item will be continued. Next, we have the approval of the minutes. Let's see. The approval of the minutes from the February 23rd meeting. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes?
Motion to approve the minutes.
Second. Right.
Mr. Plunk has made a motion to approve the minutes and Mrs. Jones has seconded that motion. Mr. Plunk, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Aye.
Mrs. Jones?
Aye.
Okay, motion passes and the minutes are approved. Next we have the approval of the final agenda.
I make a motion that we modify the final agenda to move old business to the end of the meeting.
Okay. Second.
Mr. Condon has made a motion to move all the items under old business to the end of the meeting. It's been seconded by Mrs. Jones. Any discussion on the motion? All right. Mr. Plunk, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Aye.
And Mrs. Jones?
Aye.
Okay. And I'm assuming that that motion also includes approving the rest of the agenda the way it is.
Correct.
Okay. All right, then. First, we're going to hear the case or the petition of 1702 East 34th Street, a variance to expand home daycare, 23-000976.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The petition before you at this time is a variance request to increase the number of children permitted in a home daycare from 6 to 12. The property is located at 1702 East 34th Street. This map highlights the subject property. The petitioner requested a special use approval in 2019 to increase the number of children at an existing home daycare from 6 to 12. Within residential zoning districts, a home daycare is permitted up to 6 children by right. The 2019 petition was presented under the previous ordinance. However, that petition was denied by the Zoning Board of Appeals at that time. The findings included concerns about the potential impacts on adjacent properties related to traffic at pickup and drop off, parking on street, and other findings that the board made. The board found that a home daycare in a residential district should have no more impact than other residences within the neighborhood. The property, as I mentioned, this is a photo of the subject property to now, or more current than the previous 2019 petition. At 1702 East 34th Street is east of B Road. The applicant currently operates a home daycare at that property with a maximum of 6 children. The parcel that the property is on is 5,100 square feet in size and includes a fenced backyard and the semicircular driveway that you see before you, which was placed there after the 2019 request, is my understanding, to accommodate pickup and drop off at that location. The structure on the property is 955 square feet in size. Relative to the review criteria, the requested variance would allow the use to intensify beyond that is which is typical for a traditional residential neighborhood. The potential for up to 12 vehicles in the morning and in the evening could create a nuisance for other properties in the area. The driving surface of 34th Street is less than 30 feet in width, and it is likely that increased on-street parking would occur in the neighborhood several times a day. Staff found that there are no special circumstances peculiar to the property or the structure, and that is similar to other parcels in the area, therefore not subject to special consideration. The applicant would like to increase the size of the daycare by increasing the number of children to a maximum of 12, as I mentioned. We find that the literal interpretation of the regulations would not deprive the applicant of rights enjoyed by others in the same zoning classification. One other thing that I'd like to show you. Some additional street views along East 34th, just for some context. Subject property is here. And in this view, subject property is here on the left. The property, going back to the map of the property, there is one feature that you probably noticed. There's a existing unopened right-of-way between the subject property and the adjacent residence to the west. So this is all the property back here is City of Savannah. It's a open area. However, our findings indicate that the intent of a home daycare is to provide service on a neighborhood scale. Typically, a daycare with as many as 12 children would be considered a commercial daycare, which is not permitted in a residential zoning district. Based on those findings, staff is recommending denial of the request to increase the size of the daycare from 6 children to 12. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions for staff? Thank you very much.
The applicant is present to make a presentation.
Would applicant please come forward and state your name for the record?
Erica Baker.
Good morning.
Hey, Mrs. Baker, do you have anything you'd like to say?
Yes, I've been through this back in 2019, and I'm asking that the board please just allow me the chance, you know, to go forward with the 12 children, because Most of them are siblings, and I really and honestly don't think that the traffic would be a problem because all of the children do not arrive and leave at the same time. There's different time frames that the children do arrive to the center.
Any questions for the applicant? Mr. Condon?
Have you had an opportunity to speak with your neighbors and get some feedback from them?
I did. I think three of them was supposed to email, and I thought two of them would have been here, but I don't see them. So they were in favor of me doing it because it's like it's never a problem, you know, with the children because of the privacy fence and the going and coming, and I close at a reasonable time. So.
Any other questions for the applicant? Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any members of the public that would like to speak concerning this petition? Please come forward.
Artis Wood, I want to ask the applicant about the front yard. To me, when I have seen this sort of activity, especially in a residential neighborhood, I've seen flags go up and balloons and all kinds of play equipment. And it's not that the children shouldn't be there. It's just that it changes the character of what you see on the street. So that would be my input. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public that would like to comment? If you're online, if you use the raise your hand feature, we recognize you. Mrs. Baker, would you like to respond to public comment?
Yes, regarding to the balloons, the flags, and everything, I have a basic play area with just little toys. I have pictures of my backyard. It's just slides and little, you know, seesaw horses and stuff for the kids of age and their age range. I have no tents or any flags or anything.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Time we'll enter into board discussion. Mr. Turner, do you have anything you'd like to say?
Nothing to say.
Condon? Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
Blunt?
Yes, sir.
Would someone care to make a motion? We got to do something, y'all.
Because it's not increasing the size of the house or anything. It's just the number of children.
I think we need to consider whether there's standing within the ordinance to justify a variance or not.
I wish we had some more input from the neighbors, because I think the idea really is with the ordinance to prevent a residential home from turning into a commercial application. And I've seen it happen. We all know these daycares that are in residential neighborhoods that have become very large things. I happen to be familiar with this location, and there is very little, if any, traffic on that street, to be fair. And so as a result, I think there's a possibility that this could work. But I'm wondering if it would be best to push this thing off and let her try and get some letters of support rather than, you know, act on it today.
So you could make a motion to continue it.
Yeah.
We can, I think, at least because.
What do you think of that, Ms. Jones?
Yeah, because we don't have any letters.
Right. And I'd like to know one way or the other.
Right. Mm-hmm. And she's just asking not for an increase in the size of the house, but just increase in the number of children.
I make a motion that we continue this to give the applicant the time to speak with the neighbors, get some, you know, get some letters together and that type of thing to show. I happen to be familiar with this neighborhood and this particular location, and so I know there's no real traffic there. You know, it's not a main thoroughfare, it's a side street. But I think before we take action, it would be nice for us to know. And so I'd like to make a motion that we continue this till the next meeting to give the applicant time to sort of get their ducks in a row.
Second.
Mr. Condon has made a motion to continue this petition until the next meeting of ZBA, and Mrs. Jones has seconded that. Is there any discussion on the motion? All right, Mr. Plunk, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
Okay, the motion passes and this petition is continued until the next meeting. Next, we're going to hear a variance request for 817 East 70th Street, file number 23-000827-ZBA. It's for parking reduction.
All right. Thank you. Let me pull this up. All right, so here we have a petition for a property at 817 East 70th Street. So this property is zoned BN, neighborhood business, and that requires a minimum of 6 parking spaces when you're operating a commercial business there. The applicant is requesting a full reduction of that, so all the way to 0 parking spaces. So this is the building in question. It's a relatively new, was built up, I think, about a year or two ago. Before that, it was kind of vacant and abandoned for a good long while. And this area, if you're familiar with it, is where there's a lot of doctors and dentists' offices kind of plastered around in smaller buildings. So the subject property itself is 40 feet wide, 100 feet deep. The applicant plans to run a commercial operation out of the building, and there is no room for parking on the front of the building. The property line actually runs up to like right around here. So it's there's no room in the front for parking. That's very sure. They are requesting a variance to reduce the number of off-street parking spaces to 0 from the required minimum of 6. The area around the subject property is mostly comprised of medical and dental offices, and there are a few residences mixed in. The back of the property, which I have a picture of here from the side street, has a gate, and there's an access point there with room for, we estimate, 2 cars from this. You could fit in there pretty comfortably. We received a good number of calls and emails from a few of the doctors and dentists that are in this area that were in opposition to this petition. They have perceive that there is already an extreme parking problem in this area, and a lot of their patients are already struggling to find parking to come to their appointments. Additionally, we noted that there is, you can see from these signs here, on both of the streets around this corner here, there is no street parking permitted anyway. So there isn't any place to legally park your car in this area, and this parking lot across the way is a private parking lot. The one right here is for Savannah Medical Center. So if the applicant does not provide off-street parking, it does not seem that there is anywhere for employees or customers to park at all. The requested variance is likely to be detrimental to public welfare. There is an existing parking problem in this area, in this office institutional neighborhood, and this variance would greatly exacerbate that issue. The requested variance for a 100% parking reduction in an area that's only accessible by driving is not consistent with the intent of the zoning ordinance. The property is not really of a peculiar shape or size. It's pretty much identical in dimensions to most of the properties around it. The literal interpretation of these regulations would not deny the applicant of their rights. A commercial lot this size in the BN zoning district is essentially impossible without a variance. But other lots of this size in the district have provided on-street parking have provided off-street parking or else are grandfathered in from previous zoning ordinances. The BN area is usually catered to larger lots than this is basically what it comes down to. There are a lot of lots in this area that are zoned BN that are this size. However, in the grand scheme of things, BN is usually catered to a larger lot, if that makes sense. The variance requested does not appear to be the minimum needed. It is the staff's opinion that the area behind the house could work for 2 parking spots. So if the zoning board so finds it that they don't want to move forward with our recommendation for denial, a reduction to giving them a 4 space reduction maybe would be more appropriate because they can pretty clearly fit 2 cars behind this this area here. So as I said, staff is recommending denial for this petition, and I'll take any questions.
Thank you. Are there questions for staff? Mr. Condon?
When I reviewed the presentation yesterday, I think you guys are correct in the sense that even if we had two parking spaces, one of them is going to be used by an employee.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who visits a business in this neighborhood is going to park in somebody else's parking lot because there is no on-street parking. You know, I'm familiar with this neighborhood as well, and that's really the limitation. This was a residential lot and home that happened to be changed zoning-wise to the accommodating zoning in the neighborhood rather than make it look like it was an island floating, you know.
Right.
Is there nearby, you know, let's say within a street or two, areas that people could park? Is there a place that maybe the applicant could rent a couple of spaces? Is there anything like that around?
I mean, if they wanted to rent out spaces and come to an agreement with a neighbor for like a private or for a parking exclusivity, you know, agreement, there is that lot that I mentioned that's, let me find this, like across from them, the Savannah Medical Center, which I think is not generally filled out, but it is a private parking spot. So,
and I think that without that type of an agreement, people are just going to park there anyway. And
most likely.
Yeah, and it's not fair to the guy that owns that property that maintains it and so on. So,
right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Would the applicant please come forward, state your name for the record?
Hey, good morning. Charles Rouser. I appreciate your consideration. I purchased this a couple weeks ago. I have a couple small businesses interested in it for one. It's a just very small square footage, 900 and some square feet. I have talked to Savannah Medical Center across the street just because there is no parking, residential or commercial, whoever owns it or uses it. They are open to letting us use it. They let the gym across the street use it, the Taekwondo studio. The lady I talked to said she had no issues with us using it. Also, if you look, sorry, the building across Sutliff is also mine. It's a single occupant that owns a gym equipment business. He builds gym equipment, sells it to the local gyms, and he obviously they can park over there also, directly across the street.
Mr. Gandhi, if he has a written agreement for parking with these other places, that would kind of negate his need for a variance, wouldn't it?
Yes, sir.
But wouldn't we need a letter?
Do we have a copy of that letter or, you know, some kind of?
I don't think we would, well, because if he has it, then he doesn't need to come before us.
And sorry, just for my own education, would that be, since I own the property adjacent, just something internal to myself, for you guys, for?
If the applicant has a nearby property that has surplus parking, he could use that property and essentially establish a remote parking situation. He wouldn't have to come through this board to do that. We can work with the applicant on how he can file the paperwork to do that with the city of Savannah. If he can establish his parking on a different lot, he certainly, you know, that's permitted in the zoning ordinance.
Would we want to withdraw petitioner's request?
Well, what I'd probably recommend is that if the petitioner wants to seek that out, that he continue this item at least until the next meeting.
Right.
We can work with him in the interim.
Right.
And should that work out, then we could withdraw it at that time. But I wouldn't want to take away his opportunity to be heard
right.
by this board if he couldn't work that out.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the next thing I was going to ask if y'all had any questions for the applicant. Okay.
I'm going to make a motion that we continue this to the next meeting.
I'll second.
Mr. Rouser, opportunity to try and get this ironed out, and he may not even need to be on the agenda. And thank you for your service, sir.
Appreciate your time.
Thanks. Mr. Condon has made a motion to continue this petition until the next meeting. It's been seconded by Mr. Plunk. Is there any discussion on the motion? All right, Mr. Plunk, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
Okay, motion passes, and this petition is continued until the next meeting. Next, we're going to hear 823 West 39th. variance to the minimum interior side yard setback and the minimum rear yard setback and maximum lot coverage requirements. This is 23-000872.
Good morning, board members. Melissa Lito, MPC staff. The petitioner, Andre Gadson, is requesting the following variances for an after-the-fact revision on construction of a rear addition for the property located at 823 West 39th Street. There are three variances being requested today. A variance to the maximum lot coverage requirement from 50% to 58%. A variance to the minimum rear yard setback requirement of 20 feet to 4 feet 7 and a half inches, and a variance to the interior side setback from 3 feet to 2 feet 7 and 1 eighth inch. Let me show you the demolition proposed plan here. So what they did is they built this addition, which serves as a kitchen and a bathroom, and they've received COA approval on January 25th of this year to do the revision of their after-the-fact addition. And so the part of the approval was to demolish 1 foot on each side so that it becomes an inferior addition. And so now they're here to come back to for those variances, because even though they are taking away 1 foot each, it's a very small parcel, and so they still require setback requirements, variances. This is the site plan for the subject parcel showing the 1 foot indentation. Let's see. The historic building was constructed in 1920 and is a contributing resource within the National Register Kyler Brownville Historic District and the local Kyler Brownville Historic District. The kitchen to the rear of the single family residence was added onto last year without a COA and building permits. The addition, along with a new fence, was brought to MPC Historic Preservation staff per the City of Savannah's Code Compliance Department. MPC staff worked with the applicant on the after-the-fact addition, and as I said, on January 25th, the Savannah Historic Preservation Commission approved the after-the-fact addition and alterations for the subject property. So the variances were recommended, and now they're here today. Let me show you the condition in the aerial map. So here is the subject parcel, and what happens is there's a Murray Street that is only within that subject block, and it affects the subject parcel, but also the two to this one side and then two to the other side. And then so each of their rear yards has a bit of a peculiarity in their condition of their land formation than the other properties in the neighborhoods, which are rectangular in shape. So as I go through the findings, the requested variance would not be injurious to the neighborhood or otherwise detrimental to the public health, safety, or welfare. The rear yard has a unique condition, as I mentioned, where it, but it is elevated from the street and separated by a concrete embankment. Therefore, there is no issue of public safety by the reduction of the rear and side yard setbacks. There are special circumstances peculiar to this property. The subject parcel, as well as the adjacent parcels, have a unique circumstance regarding the shape of the developed land on the subject block. Murray Street, the street which the rear of the property abuts, is a diagonal street leading to non-rectangular lot shapes and a non-uniform setback on the block. This condition is the result of the actions by the applicant in requesting to construct an addition to a single-family residence without a COA and a building permit. However, the petitioner is attempting to remedy the situation by revising the rear addition to comply with the COA approval and by applying for variances to the Zoning Board of Appeals. The special conditions, oh, here's another photo showing the angle. So here's Murray Street, and then this is the subject parcel here, as well as the adjacent parcel. So it's a very thin corner there. The special conditions and or circumstances are not purely financial in nature to allow the applicant to use the land, buildings, or structures involved more profitably or to save money. The single family residence would have a total of 2,272.5 square feet of interior space, including the 115-foot square foot addition. The subject parcel is 0.06 acres or 2,613.6 square feet in lot size, whereas the minimum lot size in the TR3 zoning district is 3,000 square feet. So they are deficient in the minimum lot size as well, which most likely applies to the maximum lot coverage requirement for variance. Staff is recommending approval for the requested variances to the minimum side yard setback, minimum rear yard setback, and the maximum lot coverage to revise an after-the-fact rear addition at property located at 823 West 39th Street. We have Andre Gottson from Eco Construction and Consulting here as the applicant, and I am here as well to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions for staff? Appreciate it. Would applicant please come forward?
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Just for a side note, I was hired to actually remedy the problem. I didn't initially do the audition, so I'm here to kind of make sure that this to try to make the audition right. I'm in agreement with the staff decision for approval.
Okay. Anybody have any questions for the applicant? Well, thank you very much, sir.
Okay, no problem.
Are there any members of the public that would like to speak concerning this petition? And if you're online, use the raise your hand feature. We'll recognize you. All right. If not, we'll enter into board discussion. Mr. Plunk, you have anything you'd like to say?
No, sir.
Mr. and Mrs. Jones?
No.
Mr. Conan? Mr. Turner?
No.
Okay, would someone care to make a motion?
Motion that we approve petitioner's request.
Second.
Okay, Mr. Plunk has made a motion to approve the petitioner's request for the several variances. Mrs. Jones has seconded that. Is there any discussion on the motion? Mr. Turner, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Okay, the motion passes and the variance is approved. Next, we're going to hear a variance request for 1119 East 50th Street, file number 23-000935. This is for a front yard setback reduction.
All right, so this subject property is zoned RSEP 6, residential single family. That requires a 20-foot front yard setback. The applicant is requesting a variance to reduce that setback by 14 feet down to 6 feet. So, let's see here. Let me show you the subject property here. We weren't able to get like a street view picture of it, but this is a neighborhood with a lot of buildings that have a very close front setback, or at least a sub 20 feet for that RSF 6 district. So the subject property is 90 feet wide by 105 feet deep, larger than most of the lots in the neighborhood. The house is currently 14 feet from the front property line, and therefore it is already non-conforming, legally non-conforming. Obviously, this home was built before NUZO was established and that RSF 6 district was established. This neighborhood was developed, as I said here. So most, if not all, of the houses within a block radius have the same non-conforming setbacks on the front. The applicant intends to construct a porch on the front of the house over the existing slab that is about 10 feet deep and 30 feet wide. That'd be a total of 300 square feet addition to the house. They are additionally planning to construct a 10 by 11.5 porch on the side of the property, for which a variance is not needed. They won't be encroaching on the side setback for that. However, I wanted to count all that up. for lot coverage, and so that does equal 40% of the lot coverage, which is the maximum allowed in the district, so they are okay on that front. So this here is a map of the lots in the area. So everything that is in red here is a front setback where the home is encroaching into the front setback. Some of them are less than this one. Some of them are more. I would say that most of them are encroaching about 5 to 6 feet into the front setback. It seems to have been the trend. So all the red ones have front porches that are extending out into the front setback. The ones with X's don't have front or don't have porches. And then this green one is the only one that is conforming in the neighborhood. So you can see there is definitely a pattern of nonconformity to the development here. This property, as I said, is not really of a peculiar shape or size. It is slightly larger than most of the other properties in the neighborhood by width. There are no special circumstances here. The applicant simply just wishes to expand the size of their home. We didn't find there to be any sort of undue hardship or burden happening to the applicant here. The literal interpretations of the regulations would not deny the applicant of their rights. As I said, granting variances is typically reserved for special circumstances where the petitioner is experiencing some sort of undue hardship. Although it would bring the home into a uniform development style with the rest of the neighborhood, the variance, if granted, would confer special privilege by allowing standards that are prohibited in the RSF6 district. And also, to be frank, the reduction from 20 feet down to 6 feet is a pretty huge reduction, more than 75%. So with all that in mind, we are recommending denial of this petition, and I'll take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Gandhi. Mr. Condon, you have a question?
Good morning, sir. How are you today?
Morning. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. When I read through this, do I understand that there is currently a cement slab in front of the house that acts something like a porch, or did I misunderstand?
No, that's true. There is a cement slab out front that they are basically going to cover with this and just add to the front of the house.
So the slab does already extend to where they're going to bring the porch?
Yes, sir. I believe so.
Thank you so much.
Any other questions for staff? Thank you very much. Do you have a question? Okay. Would the applicant please come forward?
Good morning.
Morning.
My name is Will Kazari, and I'm the applicant. I wrote up this ahead of time. I appreciate you allowing me the time to speak. Parkside is a neighborhood with a very strong community, and these porches are really the center for the social interaction. Close to 90% of the homes in Parkside have porches, and I appreciate the tough and unforgiving job that you guys do. We're not looking for a rubber stamp. In fact, we're not even looking to build something out of scope with the neighborhood. We're very much trying to fit in. And if you look within the application, we have 12 signed letters from every neighbor on the block. And we also have neighbors that came for us today and took time off to come in for this. We researched in an arc around our home 98 homes. Out of those 98 homes, the stunning 86 had porches. Of those 86, all of them but one were out of compliance because the setback rule was put in after the neighborhood was built. With this variance, we're not looking for a special privilege. We are simply trying to bring our home up to the standards of the rest of the community. It's our hope that with your help, we can improve our neighborhood to make it better, and our neighbors enthusiastically support the addition of this porch. A couple of them might even want to speak. Thank you.
Thanks. Anybody have any questions for the applicant? If any members of the public would like to speak, go ahead, Mr. Gunn.
Sorry, I just wanted to add that in addition, I did get those letters, and those should be included in the packet there. They're all letters of support. And I also additionally got a few emails and calls from other people in the area that seems to have covered basically the entire block radius around them of support. So I did want to say that.
Any members of the public would like to speak? Come on, sir.
My name is Scott Smith, and we live across the street from Mr. Kazari. And We're in a house that has been occupied by my wife's family since 1924. So we're very concerned about the neighborhood, and we look on this in a very positive way. And porch social gatherings on our block are very much an integral part of our daily activity. And we look on this in a, as a way to expand that use that has bound our neighborhood together, both new neighbors and old. And I do want to say, did we all raise our hand, our neighbors? Yes. Okay. Anyway, but I want to speak from being the oldest resident on the block in terms of longevity. And we very much would like to see this happen. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes. Yes.
So my name is Brian Dennison. I'm the other across the street neighbor, and I'm the newest neighbor, I guess, on the block. So we're going to cover the gambit. But the support is genuine. We're not doing it just to be nice to our neighbors. We love them. They're great neighbors. But, you know, it's going to look a lot better to look across the street at the house that is planned to be there. And honestly, the fact that we do occupy our porches and we're out there being a real neighborhood is special. And I think it also makes it a safer neighborhood for everybody as well. The fact that there's just a presence and everybody keeps up with each other, and it's a special thing, that particular block. And this is just going to add to that. So to me, it's in line with what the intent of this neighborhood was from the beginning, and it's going to make it a better place. So we hope that you do allow the variance. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dennison. Anybody else? Come forward, please.
I'm Dana Savage, a neighbor to the east. I neglect to get sworn in. Do you want to fix that, or shall I just go ahead and speak?
You're just making public comment. I think you'll be fine.
Okay, thank you. They have developed a very attractive plan to go over an already very attractive porch that sits over the slab. I think it will improve the attractiveness of the house and the attractiveness of the block. These are very responsible homeowners. I have no worries that the landscaping and all will be attractively done and well kept up. And I just did want to reiterate the social aspects, which are really unique in any place I've lived in Savannah, and it'll contribute to that very nicely. So my husband and I are very much in support. Told you my name, Dana Savage, but thank you.
Anybody else in the room would like to speak? I think we have Mrs. Dennison online. Mrs. Dennison, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Hello.
Thank you. Yes, I've just been listening online from work, and I've heard all of the previous comments, and I probably don't need to say much more, except I'm also fully in support, and I probably don't need to repeat any of it, but everything the previous three neighbors said, I certainly agree with, and we would be very happy to see this approval granted.
Thank you very much. Would the applicant like to respond to anything said in public comment? Seems to be
all. I just want to thank all my neighbors for taking time out of their work days to do this. That's very nice of them.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Chairman, can I clarify something?
Go ahead.
Per Mr. Condon's question earlier about the slab already being there in the front, I just wanted to clarify that this concrete slab on its own doesn't like qualify as going into the setback. You know, a concrete slab or a driveway or anything can run right up to the line there. So just wanted to clarify that.
So we'll enter into board discussion now. Mr. Plunk, do you have anything you'd like to say?
No, sir.
Mrs. Jones?
No, other than I know that the front porch is a social place for everybody, for most homes in the neighborhood. So,
Mr. Condon, Mr. Turner,
no.
Someone care to make a motion?
I make a motion that we accept applicant's request for a variance.
I'll second.
Mr. Condon has made a motion to accept the request for a variance, and it's seconded by Mr. Plunk. Is there any discussion on the motion? Mr. Plunk, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
All right. Motion passes and variance is approved. Next, we're going to hear the application for 505 East 54th Street. This is an amendment of a condition that was placed on file 13-000411, and this petition number is 23-000957.
Good morning again, Melissa Leto, MPC staff. This request is for the applicant is requesting an amendment of a condition that was placed in the parking variance approval provided on February 28, 2013, per 13-000411 ZBA file. The condition is number 5, whereas the school shall be limited to providing education to grades kindergarten through 12th grade only. The petitioner is proposing to utilize the entire building as a child care center on property at 505 East 54th Street. The lot is zoned RSF 6, residential single family 6. This is the, on the screen, the February 28th, 2013 decision from the ZBA. Approving the three variances that they were requesting. One was an approval of the requested private and parochial schools use in the RS at the time R6 zoning district, and that which is now RSF6. A variance of the minimum on-site parking requirements, and a variance to approve two vehicle parking spaces be permitted within a required building setback. And those were approved with the five conditions that are on the screen. One, the school shall be limited to a maximum of 200 students. Two, the parking area for the school shall be paved with gravel by the end of 2013. The parking area shall be screened from adjoining properties and rights of way by a Type G buffer. Traffic flow for the parking area pickup and drop off of students shall be from 54th Street to 55th Street and onto Atlantic. And number 5, which is the subject condition, the school shall be limited to providing education to grades kindergarten to 12th grade only. I can put my staff report. This is where the subject property is located, in front of Hall Park, between East 54th and East 55th Street. Subject property is 1.37 acres or 59,677 square feet in size. It comprises of two existing institutional buildings, an 8,450 square foot brick schoolhouse named the Gold Cottage, and an 875 square foot two-story cottage. For decades, the property was a refuge for orphan children. Through the years, the Gold Cottage changed hands many times. Most recently, it was a school for kindergartners through 12th grade. Currently, the petitioner is proposing to have a child care center for children under the age of kindergarten eligibility. So the entire building would be consisting of the child care center. And there would be no K through 12 is what is being proposed at this time. Let's see. Through findings, the requested variance, the requested variance to allow for a child care center in the RSF 6 zoning district is not a use that is neither special use, limited use, or permitted use. However, K through 12 school, public or private, is a permitted use with limitations. And that's our staff's recommendation of why we are recommending denial, is based on that. As it's located in RSF 6, there are no special circumstances peculiar to the property. Again, the school for K through 12 was approved in 2013. Currently, the property is not being utilized, but it could be utilized as a school again through K through 12. This condition is the result of actions taken by the applicant in requesting an amendment to condition 5 of the 2013 variance. The literal interpretation of the regulations would not deprive the applicant of rights enjoyed by the rest of the community. The property, again, could be used as a K through 12 school again. In 2013, the zoning was R6, which is similar to the current RSF6 zoning district. Essentially, they received a special use for the school use and within that variance that they received in 2013. Whereas now RSF6 allows it as a permitted use. So staff is recommending denial for the amendment to remove number 5 condition to allow for a child care center use within the building for younger children under the age of kindergarten. Joshua Yellen is the agent for the Calvary Day School Foundation Incorporated, and I and him are here to answer any questions. I believe he does have a presentation as well.
So help me understand. So right now there is a school there, and I don't believe they're going through 12th grade there in that location. They're up to like 6th or 7th grade there. And so how, by changing it from what it is now to changing it to a child care center versus a school, what technically, I mean, in reality, what's going to change? Still children there? I mean.
Right. There'd still be children there. It's just essentially what's in the RSF6. If you want to, I'll show you again the permitted uses. There is a child adult daycare home. Which is permitted, and that's very different in its scale and its need, whereas a small amount of students in a home in a neighborhood area, different than where a school would have larger amounts of younger children, and there would be traffic coming in and out for pickup and drop off. And, you know, so that's the fact is that there was a condition that was placed. Otherwise, this wouldn't be here today to be requesting that. It just wouldn't be a permitted use.
Okay. So. Any questions for that, for staff? Okay. Thank you. Would the applicant like to come forward, please?
Shoot.
Okay. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Josh Yellen. On behalf of the Calvary Day School, I do have a presentation, if you will allow me to present. Let's see. There we go. Just to give everyone some context, I'd want to show that this is the current site of the Habersham School. It is currently in use as a school. It's not been abandoned. It's an active school at this location. But as I said, for the record, my name is Josh Yellen, representing Calvary Day School, who would like to use this facility as an early childhood education facility. With us today from Calvary, we have Dr. Chadwick, who is the head of school. We have Mr. Alex Corta, who's the director of operations. We also have the secretary of the board of directors, Mr. Forbes Buck. Also from the current owner, from the Habersham School, we have with us Scott Shippey, who is also on their board of directors. To clarify, we have many people here to answer questions about the current use and the proposed use of the school. What should be mentioned is that this site is currently, although we kind of get confused in our Savannah geography, it's 2,000 feet away from the existing Calvary campus. This isn't some expansion into a part of town that we're not familiar with. This is 2,000 feet away from the existing school. And I do want to talk about, just for a little bit, even though members here are more qualified to do so than I am, this is an early childhood education facility that we're proposing. This is an accredited, licensed institution. This isn't babysitting. This isn't daycare. This is an accredited institution rated by the state. There's curriculum, there's nutritional guidelines, there's qualifications for the teacher. And so it's odd to me, also as a parent who has a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old who are in similar institutions, that there's somehow this distinction between daycare and magically you hit kindergarten and wow, that's a school. My kids are in daycare. They are learning. They have homework. They are in districts such as this. One is at Charles Ellis, also RSF6, a few blocks away from here. No problem with that use because it's a public school and the MPC and city's ordinances don't apply to them. But as we back up, I do want to give some history of this site. This site, as was mentioned in the staff report, was built in the 1930s. It is right here and encompassed actually both buildings at the time, but it is the Gould Cottage. It was built as an orphanage, which would now be considered a home for the needy or home for children under our ordinance. Also a use not permitted in the RSF 6 district. Since this building was constructed in 1938 or so, it has continually been occupied by uses that are not permitted from start to finish. After the Gould School, it went to Children's Services, also a use not permitted. After that, it went to Union Mission, also a use that was not permitted because they came before this board for approval. And in 2013, the Habersham School came before this board for approval. And what's important to note is that the approval that the school sought in 2013 was not for a K through 12 school. The approval that was sought was for a private and parochial school. That was a different use classification under the ordinance. And this is very important to the conversation that we are having today. They sought approval for use 22, private and parochial schools. At the time, use 20 was school, public or private, K through 12, not the use that was sought, parochial school. After the Habersham School was approved, the city of Savannah deleted the private and parochial school use. That does not mean that we became a K through 12 school. That means we became a non-conforming private and parochial school, which needs to come before the ZBA for a variance request. What's interesting about this as well is that even under the current ordinance, K through 12 schools are not permitted in this location. As Ms. Leto mentioned, it's a limited use. And the qualifications of that limited use is that the K through 12 school be located on an arterial street. We are not located on an arterial street. We are not permitted, even as a K through 12 school, in this location, other than as a legally non-conforming parochial school. And so what we're trying to do today is have the Habersham School transfer its legal non-conforming use to Calvary Day School so that Calvary Day School can operate as an early childhood education facility. And while this seems like a big change in use, we actually think that this use is for the benefit of the neighborhood and for the benefit of a community around it. Unlike with a traditional K through 12 school, there is not an 8 a.m. bell time. There is not a 7:30 a.m. bell time. It is not all parents drop your kids off at this one time or else they're gonna have detention. It is rolling. There are some kids who come early, some kids who come later. Same as what was mentioned before with the prior daycare. Parents come and go. Parents have different work schedules. The early childhood education facility is there to provide for parents. And it's a rolling schedule. It doesn't dump the traffic all at once. It reduces the demand. Similarly, by not having the K through 12, what they are looking at is having kids age 5 and under. These are not the kids who are running around. These are not eighth graders. These are not kids just taking over the playground at Hall Park. These are young kids who are going to be there with their teachers. The conditions that were put on this school in 2013, the only condition that we are seeking to remove is the one that limits it to K through 12. We were still agreeing to the maximum of the 200 students. We were still agreeing to keep the parking up to date to put the buffer in. And so what we see as a benefit here, that we don't think that we can rezone this property, honestly, to come in for a daycare, that the neighborhood in 2011, an applicant came in and tried to rezone the site to the office institutional use, which would permit these ECE facilities. There was pitchforks. Everyone threw them out of town, which is why the Habersham School came in, as this is a great use to take an existing non-conforming building to bring in a use that is similar to what it's been used as since it was built in the 1930s and to provide a benefit for the community. And so what we're asking for today is simply to remove the condition because we do believe that we have met all of their criteria for a variance request and that we do have a special condition here because this is an existing non-conforming use. We did not create this non-conforming use. We are simply trying to apply it in a way that benefits everyone, including the Habersham School and for Calvary Day School. And so we were excited to bring this petition before you because we think it's in keeping with the use of the building, as it's always been, in keeping with the current use of the building, it would provide a great benefit for the Savannah community, particularly those who have kids of this age group. As someone, like I said, with personal experience, there's a wait list at nearly every single child care facility in the city of Savannah. You have parents who are paying for their kids to go to school while they are still pregnant because to get them in will take too long afterwards. There is a huge demand. It's only getting worse. We are trying to provide the service that I know from firsthand experience the city desperately needs. And so with that, we respectfully request that you approve of our removal of the condition limiting the school to K through 12 to permit us to allow the early childhood educational facility. I know there's some other people who may want to talk as well, but I'm also here to answer any questions that y'all might have.
Any questions for the applicant?
So just a quick one. Good morning, Mr. Yellen.
Good morning.
Might it be better to simply add pre to an item number five, so you would allow pre-K rather than try and delete the entire item number five?
That would be something, and I'm looking at the head of the school right now. The question was whether we would be comfortable adding the restriction to allow for, I guess,
pre-K.
Newborn through pre-K versus keeping it open to the K as well.
Six weeks to pre-K. In fact, our pre-K is, I'm Hunter Chadwick. I'm the head of school at Calvary Day School. Our pre-K is actually currently located and will remain located at 4625 Waters Avenue. What we're just asking to do is move 6 weeks to four-year-olds, 3 to 4 year olds, to this location. And we,
so your pre-K is basically five-year-olds.
Our pre-K is four-year-olds, but I want to be truthful. No. Sometimes a four-year-old, depending on the age and when their birthday falls. So basically 6 weeks to 3 years old is in our ELC, our early learning center. There are some four-year-olds, as well, but our pre-K through 12 will remain located at 4625 Waters Avenue. This is just the early learning center.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Any other questions for DEFCA? Okay. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak? Mrs. Woods?
Artis Wood. I saw the sign, the COA, and I understood that they were looking for some variance in parking. I didn't understand all the details. There's a lot of details I just heard about. I heard about 300 children, and then someone else said 200 children. The main thing is I'm on the board of the Neighborhood Association, and last night was the first time I heard about all these details, or some of them. So I would respectfully request that you delay this until the applicant has an opportunity to speak to the board, if not the neighborhood. It's a big thing to change. It may work out just fine, but they've said an awful lot of, well, we can do this, but we can't do that, but then we'll extend such and such. So I think it'll go down better if we have more dialogue. Thank you.
Thank you. I will say I've read the public notice myself, and it did only mention parking. Any other members of the public would like to speak? Mr. Yellen, you'll get a chance to respond to public comment. No one else? All right, Mr. Yellen, would you like to respond?
Yes, sir. Respectfully, this petition is a little different than other applications in that we are dealing with one institution that is moving to open up a new facility. We are under contract, and we have to get the site accredited in order to start operations during a school year standpoint. Unfortunately, the delay is not something that we would necessarily be open to, not telling you how to do your job. But I had reached out to the alderman for the district initially when we had started this process. We had reached out to the Neighborhood Association presidents to hear if there was any concern. I didn't receive any feedback. We were not trying to not have the neighborhood responded, but we never heard any response. And so respectfully, we would like to keep pushing this forward so that we can open the facilities in a timely manner to have these kids have the child care facility that they need.
Thank you. Okay, we'll enter into board discussion.
Mr. Plunk, do you have anything you'd like to say?
I don't think so, sir.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I'm familiar with Calvary Day School and the fantastic work that they do. I also agree that there's a significant need for quality educational daycare in the city. And so I don't see the difference, honestly, between 200 students arriving and leaving every day that are maybe in baby carriers as opposed to being dropped off and, you know, walking into the into a classroom per se. I think 200 students and the numbers of people that it takes to get back and forth is 200 students and the numbers of people who need to take them back and forth.
Mr. Turner.
No further comment.
Mrs. Jones.
No.
Will someone care to make a motion?
I make a motion that we accept applicant's request for a variance with the following modification, that we would add to item number 5, as opposed to deleting it entirely, that it would allow for 6 months to pre-K in addition to
six weeks.
Thank you. Sorry. 6 weeks to pre-K in addition to the K through 12 that currently exists on that property.
Okay. Mr. Condon has made a motion to accept the applicant's request for a variance with the condition that we add to item number 5 to allow for 6 weeks through pre-K in addition to the K through 12. Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Turner. Is there any discussion on this motion? All right. Mr. Plunk, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
All right. The motion passes and the variance is approved with the condition. All right. Next, we're going to hear the request for 620 West 42nd Street, variance to the minimum interior yard setback and the minimum front yard setback requirements, 23-000966.
Okay, this item is for 620 West 42nd Street. The petitioner, Josh Ward of Ward Architecture and Preservation, is requesting two variances, a variance to the minimum front yard setback requirements of 5 feet to 3 feet, 3 inches, and a variance to the minimum interior side yard setback requirement of 3 feet to 4 inches to reconstruct a front porch and rear addition located on property at 620 West 42nd Street in the TR1 zoning district. 620 West 42nd Street is a historic one-story wood frame single-family shotgun house existing on an interior lot. The front porch was in disrepair and removed from the house around 2017, according to the petitioner. The petitioner is seeking to rebuild the front porch to historic context while adding a rear addition for a bathroom. There are some Sanborn maps that were included in the application showing 1916 there was a front porch, and then between 1916 and 1950 a front porch, as well as several accessory structures and rear additions. So this is the proposed site plan. They're going to be adding on to the front porch as well as a rear yard addition for a bathroom. On January 25th, 2023, the Historic Preservation Commission approved the request for rehabilitation to the single-family house and recommended approval for a front and front and side yard variance. The requirement for a side yard variance is that the property, the building, is already on a zero lot line. And so by constructing the front porch on the same footprint of the lot line as well as the rear addition, it expands the side yard nonconformity. So they're going for a minimum side yard setback as well as the front porch, which was a requirement of 5 feet, and they want to go out a little more. There is I'll show you some photos in the area. The adjacent properties are all have front porches in the front. Okay. So this is the adjacent property. They're wanting the front porch similar to this, but all of the adjacent properties on that block facing West 42nd Street have porches that are up to the property line. The applicant is proposing a wood porch, so it would be less impervious in that sense of the structure. The requested variance is not likely to be detrimental to the public health, safety, or welfare of the community. Through Sanborn maps, it shows this property had a front porch and rear addition. Also, the present development pattern, as well as the 1916 Sanborn map, indicating the development pattern consisted of a row of front gable shotguns. The proposed renovation and construction of a new front porch and rear bathroom addition is being requested to bring the building back to its historic context. However, by constructing the front porch and rear addition, it would be encroaching into the required front yard setback, and both front and rear additions, as I was explaining, would be expanding the interior side yard nonconformity of a zero setback line. Literal interpretations of the regulations would not deprive the applicant of rights enjoyed by the rest of the community. However, most of the community has a front porch close to the right-of-way. And historically, the construction of the proposed porch and rear addition for this building would bring the building back to its true historical context. Staff recommends approval of the front and side yard setbacks for the construction of a front porch and rear addition on property located at 620 West 42nd Street. I am here as well as Josh Ward, the architect, to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions for staff? All right. Would the petitioner please come forward?
Yes, I'm Josh Ward with Ward Architecture and Preservation. I'd like to thank staff for the review of this project. I've got nothing further to add, but I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Any questions for the applicant? All right. Well, thank you. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak?
My name is Ryan Jarles, Director of Preservation and Historic Properties for Historic Savannah Foundation. This was one of our revolving fund properties, and we do hold an easement on this property. So we have reviewed the plans in full, and we fully support the petition. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other members of the public would like to speak? Mr. Ward, I'm guessing you don't have anything to add to that. Okay. We'll enter into board discussion. Mr. Plunk, do you have anything you'd like to say?
No, thanks.
Mrs. Jones?
No.
Mr. Condon? Mr. Turner?
No.
Someone care to make a motion?
I move that the board's for approval.
Okay. Mrs. Jones has made a motion to approve the petition. Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second.
Seconded by Mr. Plunk. Any discussion on this motion? Mr. Plunk, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Condon?
Aye.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
All right. Motion passes and the request for variance is approved. Next, we're going to hear 12742 Golf Club Drive. A variance to the minimum rear yard setback requirement 23-000966.
All All right, thank you. The petitioner, Brandon R. Yingling, is requesting a variance from the required minimum rear yard setback of 25 feet to 11 feet for constructing a garage addition on property located at 12742 Golf Club Drive. The lot is zoned RSF 10, residential single family 10. Where the star is located is the subject property. The single family residence was built in 1963, and the property is 0.41 acres or 17,859 square feet in size, located in the Windsor Forest neighborhood. The subject parcel faces Golf Club Drive and abuts two single-family residences on Windsor Road, as you can see right here, 507 Windsor Road and 509 Windsor Road. Here is a front facade image of the subject property, and where the red square will be where the requested one-story addition to the single-family residence will be located. It is a bit jarring, and I'll show you the site plan. It has an angle shape, the proposed addition. However, it does meet the minimum side yard setback. It's just right now with the angle of the property, it has, it conforms with the 25 foot setback, but the addition does not. I don't have a, here we go with the property map. So if you see like some of this building, this portion of the angle is still 25 feet to the property line. Whereas if they're going to be adding on to that and making an L shaped, then it creates the nonconformity. The applicant, let's see, I'm showing you the site plan, going over the criteria. The proposed addition would encroach into the minimum rear yard setback by 14 feet, leaving a remainder of 11 feet 3 inches from the rear property line, whereas the minimum rear yard setback requirement in the RSF 10 zoning district is 25 feet. There are no special circumstances peculiar to the land and building involved. The petitioner is requesting an addition to use as an expansion of the garage and a workshop space. This condition is the result of the action by the applicant in requesting a variance to construct an addition that will encroach 11 feet into the 25-foot rear yard setback. There are no special conditions or circumstances that are purely financial in nature so as to allow the property owner to use the land and building involved more profitably or to save money. The literal interpretation of the regulations would not deprive the applicant of rights enjoyed by the rest of the community. The applicant currently has a driveway and carport space. The addition could have been proposed in a smaller footprint to not encroach as much into the required 25-foot rear yard setback. The variance, if granted, would be the minimum variance needed for the property as proposed. However, a smaller footprint could feasibly be constructed. And staff is, based on the variance criteria, recommending denial of the rear addition for a garage and workshop space to encroach into the rear yard setback. I believe the property owner, Brandon R. Yingling, is here to speak more about the addition. And
is there any questions for staff before we hear from the applicant? Did you have one, Mr.
Bell? No,
sir. Oh, okay. All right, thank you.
Hello, my name is Brandon Yingling, applicant and property owner. My wife and I own the property. The house has been in her family since 1993, 30 years it's been there, passed on from her parents to us. We have a family. We have three daughters. With this addition, the house originally had a garage, but it was removed for my wife's grandparents. The garage was turned into essentially an in-law suite for them to live while they became elderly and disabled. They've unfortunately passed away about 10 years ago. We've started a family, and the things that are driving this addition is that this neighborhood, Windsor Forest, there's no attic storage. I have no garage. I have nowhere to, like, work on things. I enjoy woodworking, making things for my daughter's porch swing was one thing, et cetera. I have all these, you know, woodworking tools that are just sitting in storage from my old residence when I went through college, and I inherited them from my grandfather. I just want to put an addition on the rear side. So essentially when you drive up into this carport, we'd be putting a garage door there to extend it. Current corner of the house, you saw as it jogged. This existing rear corner of the house is 27 feet off the rear property line. So if I do an addition, I could only go 2 feet out to be within the 25-foot setback line currently. As she mentioned, that denial because they're recommending a smaller addition, it's just not practical. So what I was proposing was 20-foot, you know, typical length for, you know, pulling a vehicle in there if I had to work on it. I do not intend on, like, storing a vehicle in there regularly, which the carport's the main use. This is mainly for storage and me working on, you know, hobbies, woodworking, et cetera, because, like I said, we're lacking storage space in the house. This is a, with the addition, it's a four-bedroom house. It has three full baths and because of the added in-law suite, and there's just no, besides for regular linen closets and stuff, there's no place for, you know, say holiday decorations, kids' toys. Like I said, I got three daughters from 1 to 4, you know, how that goes with clothing and toys, et cetera. I've been renting a storage unit and I just want to bring all that there so I can actually use it. Again, maintain the side setback. And I asked for 11. The design was based on the rear easement, 10-foot easement in the rear, based on my property plat that I have. It's in my application I shown. It shows the 25 on the front and then the six on the sides, or five on the sides, I believe, from the original phasing plat. I was not aware that it was 25 in the rear. This came up during the permit process. Again, I'm just a local citizen. I work in construction. I was just trying to do this the right way by doing the permit process. This just came up after doing it, and, you know, I'm here to appeal that and hopefully keep going forward with this addition. I also wanted to add, it will match the house exactly, same siding. It'll look good. My neighbor to the right, I wish she could be here, but she works at Memorial. She couldn't to help say that she supports this. The neighbors in the rear are new. That rear property is a rental. I don't know them yet. They just moved in a couple weeks ago. And then the people in the far left side, I believe that would be 509. I haven't talked to them much because they're really never home when I am. So any other questions I can answer?
Thank you. Are there any questions for the applicant? Okay. Thank you very much, sir. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak concerning this petition? And if you're online, use your raise your hand feature. We'll recognize you. Okay. But we'll enter into board discussion. Mr. Plunk, do you have anything you'd like to say?
No, sir.
Mr. Condon?
No, sir.
Mr. Turner?
No.
Mrs. Jones?
No.
Will someone care to make a motion? Come on, Mr. Turner.
I move that we approve.
Okay. Mr. Turner has made a motion to approve the request for variance. Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second.
Mr. Plunk has seconded the motion. Any discussion on this motion? All right. Mr. Plunk, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
Okay, the motion passes and variance is approved. Would any of y'all want to take a break before we move on?
We have one more before that long.
The regular
agenda?
No, it was removed.
Oh, that was the one.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm fine. Chug on to the people. Want.
Okay.
If anyone needs a break, I'm fine with it. All I'm right. Fine without one or two.
Okay, I think we're going to hear next. Next, we're going to hear 116 East Henry Street, the variance to the minimum interior side yard setback.
Yeah, that one.
23-000477.
What is this? All right. 116 East Henry Street is the applicant is requesting a variance to reduce the minimum side yard interior setback requirement from 3 feet to 0 feet to allow for the construction of a two-story carriage house with a workshop storage space on the first floor and an accessory dwelling unit on the second floor at the rear of 116 East Henry Street. The stair to the second floor will be located within the side setback, and that's why we're here today for that variance. It's the wall to the building itself is at 3 feet, 4.5 inches. The lot is zoned traditional neighborhood one. And I'll show you the proposed elevation. The historic main building was constructed here to the right in 1871 and it is a contributing resource within the National Register of Victorian Historic District and the local Victorian Historic District. The storage shed currently at the rear of the property is in deteriorating condition and is listed as non-contributing. The applicant will be demolishing the existing garage and building a new two-story carriage house. The primary contributing building first appears, I have some information about the contributing building, but currently many of the Victorian era structures remain intact with carriage houses as part of the development pattern in this area. On November 21st, 2022, the Historic Preservation Commission approved the design of the carriage house and recommended a variance to the side yard setback. Should be a site plan here. Minimize it. So the principal structure would be here. This is the adjacent building. And then they're showing a two-story structure with the staircase to the rear, which would be their side yard setback. The applicant, as I mentioned, will be demolishing the existing garage and building a new two-story carriage house. The first floor would consist of a garage space and the second floor designed for an accessory dwelling unit. The literal interpretation of the regulations would deprive the applicant of rights enjoyed by the rest of the community. However, the applicant could build in a smaller footprint to not encroach into the required 3-foot minimum rear interior side yard setback. The variance, if granted, would confer special privileges that is denied to similar properties within the TN1 zoning district for blocks with contributing structures. But staff recommends, based on the variance criteria, approval with one condition. No portion of the building shall encroach into the setback other than the staircase. I believe this was heard last month, and there were some communication issues with the architect, and so I'm hoping he's here.
Yeah.
All right. Shaw Architecture and Interiors is here for the agent, for the property owner.
Before we hear from the applicant, are there any questions for staff? Okay.
Thank you for the staff review. I'm Michael Johnson with Shaw Architecture and Interiors. We are in acceptance of the exception that the staff has thoroughly reviewed, and thank you for your review. And I'm just here to respond to any questions if you need me to. It is of note that this project was designed a couple years ago. And ownership had transferred in between the original design and the current applicant and this process. And since that, in that time period, the existing garage that or storage shed that was on the property has since been demolished since that time. And I'm here to answer any questions you might have.
Are there any questions for the applicant?
So you'll have no issue with the condition placed by staff?
No, we have no issue with the condition placed by staff. I think in the last meeting that I'm sorry we got kerfuffled on, a question was raised why we didn't introduce the stair between the two buildings instead of in the setback, and then that does encroach within the 10-foot separation between the accessory structure and the main house. To us, from a life safety standpoint, it's better to have that separation, maintain that separation, and keep that stair on the side. And by, if we were to reduce the footprint by any additional dimension, we'd really fall below the minimum square footage for an additional living unit.
And any other questions for the applicant? Are there any members of the public that would like to speak? Okay. Mr. Plunk, do you have anything you'd like to add?
No, sir.
Mrs. Jones?
No.
Mr. Condon?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Turner?
No.
Someone care to make a motion?
I motion that we approve petitioner's request with the condition placed by staff.
All right, Mr. Plunk has made a motion to approve the petitioner's request with staff's recommendations.
Second.
Seconded by Mrs. Jones. Any discussion on the motion? All right, Mr. Plunk, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
All right, the motion passes with staff recommendation. All right, before we get on to this next one, I'd like to someone to make a motion for setting the time limits for public comment and for the petitioner's presentation and for a rebuttal from the opposing side. Well, I felt like the public comment was a little too short last time. I'd like to see at least 3 minutes. And I think 20 minutes per side on the other. That's my recommendation, but whatever y'all decide is what we'll do. Yeah, y'all want to
do motion for a 5 minute recess?
All right, we'll take a 5 minute recess and then come back.
All our presentations on the agenda, so we can just open them up. And I'll do this.
The last one
that'll
be 20 seconds. Okay.
It's almost over.
Yeah, so
All right. First of all, I'd like to hear a motion for some time limits from anyone who cares.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we grant the presenters on both sides a full 20 minutes, and we grant public 3 minutes for public comment this time around, with the qualification that we ask that everyone try to, at the best of their ability, keep comments germane to the very specific and narrow issue at hand, and not to anything else within the broader scope of what's being discussed here today.
Okay, Mr. Plunk. And but before you make the motion, too, and what about a time limit for the petitioner's rebuttal to the other side?
Should I keep that? 10 minutes?
10 minutes. Almost. Okay. All right, Mr. Plunk has made a motion to set the time limits for the petitioner and for the other side, the opposing side, 20 minutes each, with a 10-minute rebuttal from the petitioner and 3 minutes for public comment. Is there a second? Second by Mrs. Jones. Is there any discussion on this motion? Okay, Mr. Turner, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Okay, the motion passes and the time limits are set. I'm gonna get my little clock going here so we can do that. All right, this is the petition for uh, 336 Barnard Street, 22-006005 ZBA. This is Andrew Jones, agent for Anna Haversham Wright, regarding a special exception 22-005355.
All right. Good afternoon, Melissa Leto, MPC staff. The petitioner, Andrew Jones, agent for Anna Haversham Wright, is appealing the December 14, 2022 Certificate of Appropriateness 22-005355 COA by the Chatham-Savannah Metropolitan Planning Commission's Historic Preservation Staff and the HDBR Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review, related to an application for a special exception to allow for the new building on the site to construct its entrance facing the north-south Barnard Street at 336 Barnard Street. The section on the screen is being appealed, section 7.8.10, G2LB tithing blocks. A building on a tithing block shall locate its primary entrance to front the east-west street. Section 312.7 under review criteria for special exceptions includes, when reviewing a special exception request, a finding shall be made by the Planning Commission, the Historic Preservation Commission, or the Savannah Downtown Historic District Board of Review for each of the criteria listed below. And I will read those out to you. A, whether the use for which the special exception is being considered would be located, operated, and maintained in a manner in conformance with the goals, policies, and objectives of the comprehensive plan and the provisions of this ordinance. Staff comments, in order to uphold the appeal, the applicant would have to prove the special exception would not be located, operated, and maintained in a manner in conformance with the goals, policies, and objectives of the comprehensive plan and the provisions of this ordinance. As to whether the special exception would not be detrimental to the public interest, health, safety, welfare, function, and appearance of the adjacent uses or general vicinity, staff comments, in order to uphold the appeal, the applicant would have to prove the special exception would be detrimental to the public interest, health, safety, welfare, function, and appearance of the adjacent uses or general vicinity. I'm going to go over some of the background and timeline here. On December 14th, 2022, the HDBR approved a certificate of appropriateness for 336 Barnard Street. The COA is being appealed specific to the section above. During the public hearing, the board reviewed all the criteria for new construction in the historic district. The board's authority allows them the latitude to make decisions based on the visual compatibility criteria as well as the design details. They found that in this case, the applicant's submittal for a special exception met the standards. Regarding the new construction's entrance facing the north-south Barnard Street, the board found it did not violate Section 7.12.7, and the standard was met. The conclusions of the board were based on the information provided by staff and the applicant at the public hearing. And as I go through the timeline, August 12, 2022 is when the architect Christian Sotil requested an interpretation of the zoning ordinance to have the entrance be on Barnard Street instead of north and south. Staff comments, Christian Sotil received a zoning confirmation letter from the zoning administrator of the City of Savannah on August 17, 2022. The zoning administrator ruled that the proposed location of the entranceway met the ordinance. On September 14, 2022, the Savannah Downtown Historic District Board of Review approved a certificate of appropriateness for the request of new construction, Part 2 design details for a single family residence at 336 Barnard Street. On September 16, 2022, Andrew Jones, agent for 120 West Jones LLC, applied for an appeal of that COA regarding the zoning confirmation letter. The zoning administrator's determination based on that the entrance of the east and west from the requirement. On October 12, 2022, Andrew Jones, agent for this time Anna Hammersham Wright, applied to appeal the COA granted for 336 Barnard Street by the HDBR on September 14th. The appellant alleged that the Chatham-Savannah Metropolitan Planning Commission recommendations and the board decision did not properly apply the standards of the Department of Interior or the City of Savannah Code of Ordinances. On October 27th of 2022, Andrew Jones, agent for 120 West Jones LLC's appeal, was presented to the Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals regarding the zoning administrator's determination of the zoning confirmation letter. The City Zoning Board of Appeals board members voted to approve the appeal of the zoning administrator's zoning confirmation letter regarding the location of the entrance to the proposed residence. The ZBA also directed the item to revert to the Savannah Downtown Historic District Board of Review. On December 14th, the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review reviewed 336 Barnard for a special exception for the property located at 336 Barnard Street to allow the main entrance to face Barnard Street. Staff comments the special exception was approved to allow for the new building on the site to construct its main entrance facing the north-south Barnard Street. The prevailing side of the board felt the Barnard location for the main entrance door was appropriate due to the placement of the lot. On January 10th of 2023, this year, Andrew Jones, agent for Anna Habersham Wright, applied to appeal the December 14, 2022 Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approval of a special exception for the property located at 336 Barnard Street. The special exception that was approved was to allow for the new building on the site to construct its main entrance facing the north-south Barnard Street. The Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review found that in this case, the applicant's submittal for a special exception met the standards regarding the new construction's entrance facing the north-south Barnard Street. The board found it did not violate Section 3.12.7, and the standard was met. The conclusions of the board were based on the information provided by staff and the applicant at the public hearing. And we are here today the special exception that was approved is being appealed here today. On Article 3, Section 3.23.6 are the actions that the Zoning Board of Appeals shall take regarding this appeal, as well as the as well as the purview of the Zoning Board of Appeals. At this time, this specific appeal received four letters in support of the appeal. However, throughout the time period of the timeline of appeals, there have been several other letters of support towards the applicant, as well as to the architect and petitioner of the property.
Thank you. Are there any questions for staff? Okay, would the applicant please come forward?
This one?
Yes.
You can minimize.
Good morning, Chairman and members of the Zoning Board of Appeals. My name is Andrew Jones. I am the authorized agent for Anna Habersham Wright, and we request that the special exception be overturned. This proceeding is not just about a door. It is not just about an entrance. This proceeding is about the primary entrance, and as we'll show, by definition, it determines the primary facade of the building and its orientation. So please keep primary entrance in your focus, not just entrances or secondary entrances. And this proceeding ultimately is about the future of the Oglethorpe Plan and the National Historic Landmark District. The Savannah achieved National Historic Landmark status in 1966. Savannah is a national landmark, not just local. It's based on the uniqueness of the Oglethorpe Plan. The ordinance provides protections aimed at protecting that status and that plan. And with the NHL comes federal oversight from the National Park Service. To the right, we see the street diagram that's in the ordinance. 336 Barnard is in a tithing block, and Barnard Street is called a north-south connecting street that connects the squares. In the pure form of the Oglethorpe Plan, shown in the 1734 Peter Gordon Plan, primary facades in tithing blocks do not face north-south connecting streets, simply the sides of the buildings. The proposal fails the first criterion. The first criterion the part of it I will address is whether the use for which the special exception is being considered would be located in a manner in conformance with the provisions of this ordinance. And the proposal fails if locating the primary entrance on Barnard Street runs afoul of other provisions in the ordinance. It has to be in conformance. In addition to the provision for which the exception was granted, two other provisions dictate the orientation of the primary entrances and primary facades of new buildings. The primary facade definition in section 13.5. 13.5 of the ordinance is the section that has all the historic definitions. And the second section it violates is the streets and lanes provision of 7810. Now, upholding the appeal on these grounds does not undermine the HDBR's discretion because the HDBR did not address the definition of primary facade in 13.5, and they did not address the streets and lanes provision in their December 14th decision. And this project violates the primary facade rule in 13.5, which defines primary facade in the context of an existing building and new construction, which is what we have here, the facade on which the primary pedestrian entrance is located. So primary entrance implicates primary facade. You can't separate them. And so if you approve the location of a primary entrance by allowing this special exception to go through, you are allowing the primary facade, therefore, to be on Barnard Street, and it doesn't meet the facade rule. Because 13.5 continues and says that for new construction, the orientation of the facade must be consistent with the primary facades of the majority of contributing structures within the visually related historic context. So we have a test that must be applied. If this building doesn't meet it, then it runs afoul of the ordinance and it fails the first criterion. And this criteria is consistent orientation with the primary facades of the majority. So it's the only place in the code I found it, but it says majority of contributing structures. They've got to be contributing in the historic context and that are visually related. So let's dive into this. Visually related historic context. This 1888 Sanborn map shows the tithing blocks, and we're talking about tithing blocks between Pulaski Square on the north and Chatham Square on the south. So these are the ones where the property is located. Barnard Street runs right through the middle. The tithing blocks, as you can see, historically are predominantly characterized by townhouses and lane buildings with primary facades on the east-west streets. Think of Jones Street, and it's stoop after stoop after stoop after stoop. And many of these structures remain, and they provide the relevant historic context. But of course, the term is visually related historic context, and visually related in section 13.5 restricts the historic context to just those buildings and structures within view of the subject property. So you're standing within the parcel lines of the subject property, and you're looking all around to see what you can find. So within view of the subject property are 33 contributing tithing block buildings that do not have primary entrances or facades on a north-south connecting street. Now, the map that I'm using is a map on your website. This is the official historic building map supplement of the Metropolitan Planning Commission. In yellow are the non-contributing buildings, and in lavender are contributing buildings. And they each have a number, and there's an index for them. Whether it's contributing or not contributing is not a matter of anyone's subjectivity. I mean, it's a legal aspect of a piece of property. An owner needs to know whether it's contributing or not contributing. What I've done then is superimpose a green oval on each of the properties that has an entrance that does not have an entrance on the north-south connecting street. And I counted 33. And keep in mind that under that test, under 13.5, non-visible buildings are excluded. So it's got to be visible from the subject property. And you can see 336 Barnard, non-visible buildings are excluded. So on the lower right here, on the east side of Barnard Street, there are a whole bunch of buildings. Be happy to include them, except that 13.5 says you can't because they're blocked. The view of them is blocked by 344 Barnard. So if you're looking towards them, you can't see them. Interestingly, three of those have entrances that face correctly the east-west street. One of them at the bottom, 414 Barnard, does have an primary entrance facing Barnard Street. But under the 13.5 test, that is just not relevant because you can't see it from the subject property. So those are not visible under this test. And non-contributing buildings are also excluded. And what you see next to 336 Barnard, you see across the street, and please keep track of some of these numbers, they'll come up later. 346 and 348 Barnard are the yellow space that's between 334 and the building on Jones Street. 346 and 348 Barnard are not contributing buildings. There's just no question about it. They're not in the index that's associated with this, and they're indicated in yellow. 200 West Jones Street looks like a contributing building. It's an excellent example of infill, but it's not a contributing building. It was built later. There's no ands, ifs, or buts. And it has a side entrance called 347 Barnard. And you'll see that the applicant was going to try to claim that that 347 Barnard is a primary entrance on Barnard Street. It's not. It's a secondary entrance, and it's a secondary entrance of a non-contributing building. So 13.5 test only looks at contributing buildings. So these are excluded. So we have the 33 buildings here on the upper left. You can see 201 to 203 West Charlton. It's a paired Greek Revival townhouse and carriage house with the entrance for the main houses facing West Charlton Street. On the lower left are the backs of the Jones Street buildings on the next block over, 202, 208 to 222. All those have entrances that are on Jones Street. You look at the upper right, you see 123 West Charlton. That's the building in the front of the subject property. And on the other side, it's got a big stoop that faces West Charlton Street. And then you look at the, looking out the other side, you see all of the carriage houses in Jones Street. And from the subject property, you can see all the way down. So those are properly aligned. And the 33 buildings also include, if you look down Barnard Street on the west side, you can see these buildings. They're minimally visible just because of the distance and leaves and things, but they are technically visible. And those include the townhouse on the corner, the one adjacent to it. And as you look in the lower left, you'll see, you can see the carriage house. That's a little porch-like structure. And you can also see the building on Tatton Street. That's a taller building in the background. On the upper right, you see 117 West Charlton, so that's immediately next door to the property, and you see 111 West Charlton, which is that solid brick wall. And again, that blocks the view of anything else down that block. And those buildings face Charlton Street correctly. And then what was interesting is going to the site, from both sides of the site, I took photographs looking down towards Jones Street, and you can actually, when you look at the carriage houses, you actually see all the townhouses that face Jones Street. They're taller and they peer up over those carriage houses. So those are the 33 properties that are involved. Here is the list of the 33 properties. I've included the MPC contributing building number as well as the PIN number. For condominiums, I've only included one PIN. Another note is that the visually related definition also gives a greater weight to adjacent structures. But when I looked at the definition of adjacent structure, it only refers to buildings that share a parcel line. So it's not a building across the street. It's one that shares a parcel line. And the two buildings that are adjacent, again, do not have entrances, primary entrances or primary facades in the north-south street, and they are 117 and 123 West Charlton Street, which share the parcel line with the subject property. Now, the MPC looked at it from the other perspective. How many buildings do have primary entrances on north-south streets? And they did a detailed study, and we're happy to stand by that study. And you can see here, they broke it down actually by dates of construction. But you can just see immediately visually, you're not talking about the majority of structures really anywhere. I mean, it's the minority of structures. And they have a detailed index, so if you question whether something is on this map, you can check the address. And what did they find? Well, they found that only one contributing building visible from the subject property has a primary entrance on Barnard Street, and that is 344 Barnard. So we acknowledge that. Now, there's some subtleties here. The MPC staff reports some other buildings, 339 Barnard and 350, as comparable entrances, but they're not primary entrances. They don't show on the map as being primary entrances because they're not. They know they're not. So don't be confused when someone starts talking about buildings that have entrances. They've got to have primary entrances. And the MPC staff report also referred to buildings that its own maps, as we saw earlier on slides 12 through, that its own maps show are not contributing, and that's 346 and 348 Barnard. as well as 347 Barnard, which is that side door to 200 West Jones. So keep in mind when you see those addresses pop up again that they are not contributing. And also, just interestingly, note that 344 Barnard under the statute doesn't constitute an adjacent property because it's across the lane. It doesn't share a parcel line. So the review board erred, and the special exception must be overturned. The special exception is not in conformance with the majority test in the primary facade definition. So it is not in conformance with the ordinance. It runs afoul of another important provision, 33-1. 33-1. And if you give greater emphasis to the adjacent structures, it's 2-0, which is infinity. So the special exception is not in conformance with the ordinance, and it must be overturned under the first criterion. The proposal is also not in conformance with the streets and lanes provision, which provides that new construction shall respect the pattern of streets and lanes. And in this provision, it describes the Oglethorpe Plan area as part of the NHL district. The NHL is thereby assumed, and it carries with it oversight by the National Park Service. Now, in looking at streets and lanes, the other side of Barnard Street still preserves the Oglethorpe format. The 1985 designation for the historic district specifically discussed tithing lots, and it said the typical site plan for these lots consists of the main structure. You can see that the big house on the right that's on West Charlton Street, abutting the right of way, behind which is a courtyard. You can see there's a small courtyard and there's a gate, and a dependency, that tiny carriage house. So the other side of the street is still in pretty good shape. And the NPS has for years been concerned about the discernibility of the plan. And in the 2018 National Park Service report, in other words, they haven't been just weighing in recently. This goes back to 2018. They identified threats to the plan. And they said that new construction in the open space between buildings and their corresponding lanes, like 336 Barnard, interrupts the house, courtyard, carriage house rhythm. So on the top, you see the subject property. The building in the front is like the Oglethorpe plan. There's a courtyard, and there is this small cinder block building. But technically, you're still in the correct pattern. After this structure is in place, it will do exactly what the National Park Service said not to do. And look at what the street looks like now. It doesn't look like a north-south connecting street anymore, and it's impossible to perceive the Oglethorpe plan in that layout. And that is what triggered the National Park Service to call out 336 Barnard as a negative in the September letter. And they specifically focused on the streets and lanes provision. They said that was a great provision, and they commended Savannah on having that. But they said that in looking at that provision, what mattered was the discernibility of those historic pattern of streets and lanes. And they actually said that 336 Barnard, with its primary facade on Barnard Street, negatively impacts that discernibility. So to recap, the appellate only needs to show that one criterion was not met, because after all, the board, to grant the special exception, had to make two findings, and if they can't make one finding, then they couldn't have granted the special exception. The review board erred because the proposal is not in conformance with the provisions of the ordinance. If one or both of the following is true, that the proposal fails the definition of primary facade 33-1, or the proposal negatively impacts the discernibility of the streets and lanes. And again, HDBR discretion is not an issue because the review board did not make findings on either provision. If you decide on the first one, then you're done. If you don't, and you look at the second one and you don't rule on that, keep in mind that the NPS currently is relying on this provision as one of the provisions that they think is protecting the historic district. So if you're making a ruling saying that they shouldn't rely on it, that's a pretty strong message to be sending to the National Park Service. The proposal also fails a second criterion. It's detrimental to the public interest in maintaining the integrity of the NHL, and it's detrimental to the appearance of the vicinity. And HDBR discretion is, again, not an issue because they didn't make findings for either argument. The public has an interest in the integrity of the NHL. The recent meeting between the city and the National Park Service reflects the importance to the city of keeping the status. Over 500 people have signed a change.org petition against the special exception for 336 Barnard. The letters, as of that earlier, of the December 14th, were running roughly 4-1 against the exception. And the prestige of being at NHL is important to the tourism industry. And keep in mind that the NPS also called out 336 Barnard as representative of the sort of incremental change that collectively could have ill effects on the integrity of the NHL. So what did the review board do? Well, they erred. Member Thompson, who voted for the exception, did not like interference from Washington. But as another member explained, NHL status inherently comes with federal oversight. The obvious inference is that Thompson personally does not like NHL status. Chairman Isaacs, who voted for the exception, explained that she did not like the principal building courtyard carriage house format of the 1985 designation update. She didn't like it. And the reason she didn't like it is she said that erroneously, that respecting that format would require tearing everything down that didn't match. So the review board erroneously did not make a finding on this issue, refusing to recognize the valid public interest in the district's NHL status. Moreover, in attacking the designation language and NHL status, members of the review board acted beyond their discretionary powers in an arbitrary and capricious manner, and their reasoning was erroneous and an abuse of discretion, especially since rejecting the exception does not require demolition of contributing structures. The second criterion also concerns detriment to the appearance of the vicinity, and the review board did not make a finding that the proposal was not detrimental to the appearance of the vicinity. But of course, it is detrimental because it introduces a building that does not conform to its context. So if you're proceeding north on Barnard Street from Chatham Square, what you see are mostly the sides of townhouses and carriage houses. You see their sides with some secondary, but not primary, just some secondary entrances on Barnard Street. And as
Mr.
you go
Jones,
a little...
I just want to tell you we're at 1 minute.
Okay. And moving towards Jones Street, you can see the same conditions apply. It's a jewel of preservation, and the proposed structure violates this cohesion. You don't see any large, gaudy primary entrances. You don't see – here are the doors that you see, these secondary doors. You don't see primary doors with transom windows and so on. And notice that the review board failed to make the two findings at all, and this is actually a reason that you should consider overturning. They made one decision that the special exception criteria are met, but the – statute actually says a finding shall be made for each of the criteria. They needed to make two clear findings. All they did was just throw up their hands and say the exceptions were met. The staff made some findings. There's no question about that, but the review board actually didn't make any findings. And with that, I will conclude. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. All right, are there any questions for Mr. Jones?
Not yet.
Okay.
We do have a lot of more supportive material, photographs of buildings and details, if you're interested.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Harold Yellen. I'm here today on behalf of Mr. Brad Ball, the owner of 336 Barnard Street, and Mr. Christian Sotil, the project architect, is also with me today. I know Melissa went through procedurally how we got to be here today, but I see this graphically better than I can see it in summary form. As you can see from what I hope is on your screen, this petition was approved for Part 1, Height and Mass, December of 2020. At that hearing, we showed our primary entrance on Barnard Street. The HRB preservation officer recommended approval of our plan. The HRB board approved our plan for height and mass, finding that the building was visually compatible. In September of 2022, we again appeared before the Historic Review Board for Part 2 design. They do it in two meetings. Height and mass comes first, then design. Once again, our submittal showed a primary entrance facing Barnard Street. Once again, The preservation officer recommended approval of part two, and in fact, the full board voted in favor of our submittal, which again showed a door on Barnard Street. As a result of these hearings, HDBR issued a COA, a certificate of appropriateness, for this site. Since this petition, there have been four appeals filed by Mr. Jones. Four. Mr. Jones appealed the decision of the zoning administrator to the ZBA, which resulted in our having to go back to HDBR for a special exception to hear one issue, the location of that door, and we did. And when we went back to HDBR, as instructed by this board, HDBR approved the special exception with respect to our primary entranceway, and Mr. Jones has appealed that too. And that's what we're here today to talk about. Bottom left corner, that appeal. That's the only thing before you today. Mr. Jones, incidentally, on the right-hand side, has also appealed the issuance of a COA by HDBR to this board. You previously denied that appeal, and so Mr. Jones has appealed that decision to the Superior Court of Chatham County. Interesting to note that lawsuit was filed on February the 22nd. We're now a month later. No one has been served with a copy of that appeal. You either take it down to the Gold Dome, everyone should know where that is, on the corner of Bay and Bull, or you can give it to the city attorney. That's how you get the process going. But for whatever reason, Mr. Jones has appealed and hasn't served anyone as of today. So today's hearing relates to one and only one issue, and it's the location of that door on Barnard Street, the lower left-hand box. It's the appeal of the special exception given to us by the Historic Board of Review. Mr. Jones, individually or as agent, has appealed this decision. Again, his fourth appeal. And if you read all the materials he submitted, he has roundly criticized staff members and board members and participants, anybody who seems to disagree with his view of the law or history or architecture. But the number of people who disagree with Mr. Jones is a very long list of people. At that meeting, at the Historic District Board of Review meeting, testifying in support of 336 Barnard Street, Satil and Satil, Mr. Christian Satil will speak momentarily. He's the former dean of School of Building Arts at SCAD. He developed the Savannah Architecture and Urbanism Resource Manual, still in use today. Believes strongly that this door is visually compatible on Barnard Street, and that was expressed to the board. Three additional architects submitted letters. Mr. Pat Shea disagreed. He said the village plan and its evolution from six wards into over 20 wards was never intended to limit tithing lots on corners from having entrances on north-south streets. Numerous examples of historically significant buildings which do just that. Letters from Neil Dawson, local architect. The proposed design for a home facing a north-south street on the rear portion of a tithing lot is compatible and consistent with the development pattern of Savannah. Many of our most cherished historic buildings follow this same pattern, add richness and engagement to our urban experience. The Historic Review Board heard from Rebecca Lynch, who was a past board chair of HDBR, writing in support of the petition. The building entrance slash frontage on Barnard Street is the most appropriate orientation for its lot, and as there are several examples of similar orientations for contributing buildings on the ward, we find it visually compatible. Dr. David Goebel, who's been a professor for 27 years at the Savannah College of Art and Design, who has his master's from Princeton and from Virginia, and his PhD in theory and criticism of architecture from Princeton, testified at the Historic District Board of Review And as one of the foremost experts on the Oglethorpe Plan, perhaps together with Dr. Robin Williams, with whom he has co-authored, he said, this plan does not violate the Oglethorpe Plan. Literally, the foremost expert on the plan testified before that board that it did not violate the plan. Historic Savannah Foundation, who are staunch defenders of our district, testified below in support of 336 Barnard that it was, in fact, visually compatible. But perhaps the most important evidence, testimony, came from the preservation officer for the city of Savannah. Leah Mahalik also disagrees with Mr. Jones. In her staff report, she says there are ...130 buildings on tithing lots that face a north-south street. 113 of the 130 buildings are contributing buildings that were built within the district's period of significance. She also said that our entrance location facing Barnard Street, quote, was consistent with contributing buildings that are visually related. Mr. Jones has seen this before. He knows. He submitted a petition to HDBR a couple of years ago to install wooden bars on his property that he either owns or owns as an LLC. This is his submittal. This is the building behind him that faces a north-south street with a primary door on Habersham Street. He submitted materials that show in 1871, the carriage house faced Habersham, a north-south street. 1891, the carriage house faces a north-south street. Sanborn, 1884, the carriage house faces a north-south street. This is his submittal of his neighborhood. The red circles are mine. Everything else is his. This is his context. And if you look at the red circles across the street, a duplex, primary entrance facing Habersham Street. Other side of the square, two additional homes, both facing Habersham Street, a north-south street. Having been involved in this petition now for quite some time, you have to walk the city to appreciate how many of our contributing buildings face north-south street. It is not an anomaly. It appears throughout our historic district. The third thing that our preservation officer said, in addition to the 130 buildings, which are contributing that face north-south, in addition to the fact that our entrance location was consistent with contributing buildings, she made a very important point. She said to locate our entranceway, and I'm going to quote her because I don't want to say this wrong, to locate our entranceway, quote, anywhere other than this north-south street, in this context, would be visually incompatible. Her quote, not mine. To put this door anywhere else would be visually incompatible. So HDBR considered all of the evidence. They considered what we presented. They considered what Mr. Jones presented, and it was exhibits and testimony and live testimony. They heard both sides, but HDBR has agreed with the property owner, and they disagree with the appellant. Mr. Jones may have reason to be upset, but Mr. Jones does not have grounds for an appeal. HDBR did their job. They did not commit error in any way, in any form. So today there is, in fact, only one issue, only one issue. Did HDBR err in granting a special exception for this door, or this door to be on Barnard Street? Did they correctly approve this exception, or did it commit error? And if you believe, as I do, that HDBR was correct and did not err, please deny this petition. Mr. Jones has another remedy. He'll file his fifth appeal. I'm pretty sure about that. We are without remedy. We need to get going. We need to know where we stand. The appellant, who has chosen to appeal four times and will likely appeal a fifth time, is with remedy. He can simply bundle all of his appeals and let's go to Superior Court. But we would respectfully request that you deny the appeal and approve the process below because no error was committed. And I thank you very much for your time, Mr. Merriman.
You have about 9 minutes left. Does anybody else on your side want to speak?
Mr. Sotil will speak.
Mr. Sotil, please come forward.
Good morning. My name is Christian Sotil. I'm the architect of this home, and I appreciate your time this morning. The actions of this appellant have been to consistently find ways to delay this project. We appeared at the Historic District Board of Review to receive our final approval in September 2022 after 2 years of diligent work on this project. Those 2 years involved all the appropriate stages of design review, public hearings, and public input. Those votes all resulted in a final approval. Since that time, the actions of this appellant have directly resulted in delays and conflicts in the process among city staff, among the boards, and among the community. This has to end. In December, the Historic District Board of Review was asked to consider a very straightforward question. The ZBA had asked the board to consider the position of the main entrance for the single-family residence designed for 336 Barnard Street. The design of this home had already been reviewed twice, Part 1 and Part 2, by the City Preservation Officer and the Historic District Board of Review, and had been approved and found to be visually compatible in both instances. And in December, it received its third approval. So this special exception that they were providing was to affirm the location of its primary entrance, its front door, on Barnard Street. This was found to be the only visually compatible option for this particular lot. I want to note what the special exception language says, 3.12. And it quotes, it establishes procedures for providing relief from specified standards within the ordinance. It is not the intent of the special exception to eliminate such standards, but rather to provide a process by which exceptions can be made for individual circumstances. And I must underscore the fact that this is a primary building facing a primary street. The parcel map describes that clearly. The special exception that was granted is not a special privilege. When a legal lot of record is physically constrained from meeting the requirements of the ordinance, a special exception is the mechanism in the ordinance to allow buildings on such lots to have a front door on the street. And it must be underscored that in no way does this project violate the Oglethorpe plan. It must be noted as a fact that the very ordinance language, 7810A, refers to the Oglethorpe plan area as encompassing everything in the city plan between 1733 and 1851. And as has been previously documented, you've heard 130 buildings have been built in such a configuration as the subject home all over the city, with the majority of those buildings built in the 1800s, some going back to the 1700s. So it is a fact that this pattern is within the Oglethorpe plan area as recognized by the ordinance through 1851. These buildings are literally found everywhere throughout the historic district, including next door to the property. This was one of the exhibits reviewed by the Historic Board of Review. Just within the immediate block, there are multiple entrances to buildings. These are entrances that have addresses. One comment that was made that a primary entrance is not primary because of its aesthetics or its level of grandeur or simplicity. It's simply the primary door to a given use, a residence, a business. So just in our local block, you see multiple entrances that are addressed entrances. They are the only way to get into that space. You can send a letter to that address. You can, if you Google map it, it will take you to that door. These are addresses. These are certainly privileges commonly enjoyed by properties, and I would certainly underscore that addresses are good things, not bad things. In fact, there are 192 tithing blocks in the Savannah plan, and 130 buildings front onto north-south streets. So clearly it's, I would suggest it's certainly not an anomaly. It's very much a part of the way our city works. I know our next door neighbor, this is a building that often gets sort of left out of the conversation, but it's certainly the most obvious precedent related to this project. And others that are within the local context, and others that are in fact visible from this site. Even if you were to take a strict line of visibility, you could stand in front of 336 Barnard and you could see every building in this image, I believe is fair to say. And the one on the top left is actually in the very same block, but you'd have to lean out into the lane to see it, I guess. So it's a sort of a ridiculous argument. And in fact, when you look at the city, as has been said, so many important and simple and grand buildings do this. We could not imagine Savannah without this pattern. So in December, the MPC staff detailed their findings about the special exception criteria. And I do want to say these findings were clearly articulated individually and separately within the staff report, which comprises the board decision and the certificate of appropriateness. Of course, in December, we supported the MPC's staff research and their recommendation for approval. The full Historic District Board of Review then reviewed the recommendation, heard public input, and voted for approval. So I appreciate your time this morning and your service to this board and to the community. And I urge you to deny this appeal and to uphold the integrity of the work of the MPC staff and the Historic District Board of Review. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Satil. Mr. Yellen, y'all have about 2 minutes. You got anybody else?
Just the two of us. It's okay if we don't take our full 20.
That's fine. Just want to make sure it's been extended to you.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Jones, would you like to have a time to rebut? You have 10 minutes.
Yes, if we could go back to my presentation. So Mr. Sotil showed a number of examples of what he claimed were primary entrances on Barnard Street. So let's look at his examples. It'll take me a minute to get this cursor down. Is there a way to move through the slides faster? I can't get rid of what you have on the upper right and it blocks the cursor. I would hope you would hold off my time because we have a technical problem here.
Yeah.
50, if you can go to 50.
Okay. Yes.
Okay, I'd like to begin now.
Okay.
Okay, here are the examples offered by the applicant. 350 Barnard. Well, look what 350 Barnard really is. It's a side entrance to 132 West Jones Street. The primary entrance is obviously the building on the stoop. By the way, this is also not visible, so it doesn't fall under that 13.5 majority primary facade test, but he cited it anyway. And then he cites 347 Barnard, this door. But hey, that's another side door. And the primary entrance is clearly on Jones Street. But this also fails because this isn't a contributing building. So it doesn't fall under the tests that we described before. And then he looks at this one and, you know, obviously that has to be the primary entrance. Well, gosh, you know, if you go there and you look at the sign, see the little oval sign, guess what it says? Please use courtyard entrance. That's not the primary entrance of the building. The primary entrance is in the courtyard. You can see it right there, circled in green. And you can see that that's the facade of the building. It's got the decorative elements. It's got the windows aligned symmetrically. That's the historical entry to this particular building. The other side is clearly not a primary facade. It doesn't even have a second story window. Then he cites these buildings, 346 and 348. Well, as I showed you on the contributing building map, the official building map, these are not contributing. And then he cites that whole row on 341 to 4041 Barner Street. They're on the other side of Chatham Square. You'd have to be able to see through every single tree on Chatham Square to see those. Same thing with 445 to 455 Barnard Street. They are not visible. And then he cites 339 Whitaker. But you can see, look down the block. You see, they're big buildings that block the view from the subject property. So under the 13.5 test for a primary facade, this building is not one that you can look at because it's not visually related under the ordinance's definition of strictly related. And everything you hear, you've heard in this presentation, has nothing to do with the ordinance. It's about art historians and the view of architects. You're here to interpret the ordinance and read it under a level of statutory construction of its plain meaning. And the plain meaning is pretty clear. It says this project fails 33-1. 414 Barnard is also not visible. And even though it's said to have a primary entrance on Barnard Street, actually it's got three entrances on Barnard Street. So how do you know which one is actually primary? Now, he said he was physically constrained, and we looked at the property before, and Ms. Jarrett last time noticed, of course, there's a path that runs along the north facade of the building. He's not constrained. You can enter through that gate and get through there. And we also showed through the legal documentation for the condominium that the path to West Charlton Street was also accessible. And they said, you know, there are no examples of entrances on West Charlton Street that are gates that lead to the rear lots. Yes, there are. Here they are. There's 111 West Charlton, and there's 109 and a half West Charlton. So, in fact, what they're saying is impossible is possible. In fact, they proposed it in 2017 with a carriage house for this exact same site that was where they used the lane to approach it. So it can comply. In fact, he says, you know, that he's got 336 Barnard as the address and he has to use it. Well, guess what? 336 Barnard is actually the address of the path. The common area that leads back to the building, and you can even see that on the Board of Assessors website. And here's the parcel number. They look at the entire district in their analysis, and that's a good starting point. But this test under 13.5 says visually related. So it doesn't matter what's going on with a church on Oglethorpe Street or anywhere else. That's just not correct. They talked about the staff decision, but go back and look at it. The decision itself is extremely narrow. It just has one sentence. All of the recommendations were MPC staff recommendations, and there's no way to know whether or not the board actually followed those. Now let's go to some issues of truthfulness here. I own a building, yes, it is a carriage house. And what you will see with my building is that, in fact, what he cites as the primary entrance is not. So he's citing this entrance on Habersham Street. See, the building isn't actually an L shape, and that was added at a much later date when the building was commercialized. But look at the interior courtyard. Do you see there are two doors here? Well, that upper door is where my mother-in-law lives. And that is the only entryway. The only entryway to that unit is by going through the courtyard or through the primary house into the courtyard, up the stairs. There's no internal staircase. So there is no way that the storefront door could be called a primary entrance to the building because you can't even get to half the building from that door. So just to set facts straight. There's a lot of talk about visual compatibility. Keep in mind, visual compatibility is a different test under a different section. It's under 7.89. We're discussing the design standards for the primary entrance. Visual compatibility has its own test for primary entrance, and they met it. They got part one approval for visual compatibility for the entrance. It expired on December 9th, 2022. But what we're discussing are design standards under 7, 8, 10. And that's the provision that we discussed with regard to the door. And it's not visual compatibility is not the test under any of the design standards. So if you're even paying any creed to this concept of visual compatibility, what you're doing is you're rendering the design standards irrelevant because you're allowing visual compatibility of 7.89 to override 7.810. And you can't do that under Georgia law. You can't interpret a law that would render a whole nother section of the statute irrelevant. And again, they cited buildings all over the district, but the only ones that are relevant to the test are those that are contributing and that are visually related. And the MPC, we stand by the MPC finding that the only building that they have to rely on is 344 Barnard. That's fine, they can rely on it, but it doesn't meet a majority test. One is not a majority against 33 that show the other pattern. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Okay, I'm gonna give a chance for us to ask any questions we want of whoever we want to when we get into board discussion. At this time, if you're a member of the public that would like to speak, Mrs. Nagel, you can come forward. You've got 3 minutes.
Hi, my name is Sabrina Nagel. I live on the block, and I've lived on the block for almost 10 years now. I'd like to set one thing straight, is that these four or five appeals that they have mentioned, none of them have been actually Andrew Jones. They make it look like he's appealing everything by himself. He's actually appealed for our neighbors and all of us that live around the area. So we just ask him to be our agent. Well, I say we, our neighbors that have filed appeals. We've asked him to be our agent just because he speaks really well and he knows the ordinances really well. So they're not really his. It's not one man fighting this fight. It's the neighbors fighting this fight. So my husband and I live on the block with our two little kids, and I'm here to speak on behalf of the neighbors. 14 of us, there's actually just two that have not spoken up against it. One of them has work going on by the contractor who's got this project, so I understand why he wouldn't want to go against him. And the other ones just are choosing not to speak publicly over personal problems. But 14 of us have sent in letters. We've spoken. We've appeared at every one of these meetings. All we're asking for is the ordinances to be enforced. We're not saying don't build anything. We're not saying we don't like new things. We're just saying enforce the ordinances. That's all. We're concerned that this has triggered the national parks to emit a letter threatening our status. So that means that this exception definitely is detrimental to the public and to the neighbors. So that fits that bill. If this threatens our National Historic Landmark District, it threatens us. Please don't agree to grant special exemptions to a project that doesn't need one. I have stood up here and I have shown you in slides how they can perfectly well reconfigure this door to fit the ordinances. They don't need a special exception. Why should they be granted one? I say let's put the who's who aside here and just stick to the ordinances and listen to the neighbors, please. I just heard this guy, you know, who wanted a porch, and I loved how his neighbors came and spoke, and that mattered, right? Well, here we are, all the neighbors, the people who are not being paid to be here. We're all here, and we're here time after time. We're pleading respect the ordinances for us, for our neighborhood, for our community. The man asking for the special exception does not live there. He is an investor. The architect is being paid. The lawyers are being paid. All these people are being paid. We're just the neighbors. We live there, and all we're asking for city council and the boards to do is respect the ordinances and don't grant special exceptions where you don't need them. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other members of the public like to speak? Mrs. Woods?
Slides 11 or 12 through 13.
That's all right. Okay.
I hope this works.
109.
I'm sorry, I can't. Okay, I might not be able to find what you're looking for. Why don't you talk and I'll see if I can find it. I think it's around, they are from the back.
109, 111 West.
Oh, so, yeah. Yeah. There they are. No, that's 120. That's 117. I'm going to be able to do it.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Boy. All right. I apologize. We couldn't find the slide that I was hoping for. My name is Kathy Lidvina, and I am a neighbor and a resident of the downtown historic district. For this design, the main entrance is best on Barnard Street. This design is only possible with a special exemption. A special exemption should not have been granted because there is a mean for a northwest entrance. You simply look around the block to 109 and 111 West Charlton Street. The pictures you saw before, and you can see this fuzzy image right here. It's the block in the center of the square. It's a tithing block. It's been subdivided. So you have two subdivided lots, which is exactly the situation we're in right now. From one tithing block. They're two historic contributing million-plus dollar properties. 111 West Charlton Street is a separate PIN. It's a separate owner. It fronts an east-west street. Its main entrance is Charlton Street. When this lot was subdivided, when the 336 West Barnard Street lot was subdivided, the ordinance was in place. The primary entrance could have been designed to meet the ordinance. The addresses can be changed, and so can designs. Please respect the ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Woods.
Oh, I love creative people, right brain people, right? The teachers, the ones that make new things, that use the word evolve. And what we're talking about, though, is the law. It's kind of dry. You have to go through and check everything. So unfortunately for the creative folks, we're saying there are a lot of variations you can do within the law right now, but what is being proposed is not legal according to the ordinance. Now, if they want to do that, I think it's incumbent on them to change the law. And I live in a democracy and you live in a democracy. I think we are so privileged. So whether we like something or not, we have to abide by the law. And if we don't like the law, we change it. Downtown is 3% the landmark historic district. And for those that want to get creative and wonderful, we've got 97% of the rest of Savannah to go on beyond what the law allows. Our prestigious designation as a national landmark by the National Park Service is clearly a feather in Savannah's cap in which we can all be proud. The NPS speaks for and to our nation, but as it giveth, so it can take away. We are in danger of having this happen, which it stated in their recent letter, specifically due to diluting Oglethorpe's plan on which the status is based. One member of the Historic Design Review Board, Historic District Board of Review, stated clearly that being a locally designated historic district is enough. When he said, but I want to be sure I quote him right, so we have it on tape.
Washington, Atlanta, Wayne, right here with all of you that live in the community and other folks out there.
So Washington and Atlanta aren't relevant. And if we don't want to be a national historic landmark district, then that's the way it probably should go. But another member of that board saw our national recognition as valuable and worth preserving. Said she, quote, the failure to recognize the difference between a regular historic district and a national landmark historic district suggests that maybe Savannah isn't able to provide the stewardship. I still have concerns about this project and the precedent and the continued deterioration of the district's integrity, end quote. Remember, our national status is not based on a Savannah plan or a Georgia plan. It's based on the Oglethorpe Plan, which is clearly stated in our zoning code and on which your determination must legally rest. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Wood. Any other members of the public wish to speak? Dr. Williams? Dr. Williams is going to speak next, ma'am.
I'm sorry.
I've recognized Dr. Williams. He's going to speak next, and then I'll recognize you.
Good afternoon. I'm Dr. Robin Williams, Chair of the Architectural History Department, Savannah College of Art and Design, former long-term member of the HDBR, and currently on the Historic Preservation Commission. Neither of those boards for which I was paid, like you, volunteer my time, and just for the record, I'm not being paid to make comments here today. For almost 30 years, I've studied the architectural and urban history of this marvelous city. The orientation of a building at the rear of a tithing lot to the central north-south civic street, in this case Barnard Street, conforms to centuries-old patterns of urban development within the Savannah Plan. My colleague, about whom you heard earlier, Dr. David Goebel, and I use the term Savannah Plan rather than Oglethorpe Plan in our forthcoming book being published by UGA Press on the history and evolution of Savannah's celebrated urban plan and the architecture it shaped. Oglethorpe planned a town of six wards with no intention of expanding the plan, as Tom Wilson has convincingly showed in his book on the broader regional plan that developed out of the 18th century Enlightenment. Following the end of the trustee control of the colony, adaptations began to the plan beginning in 1770 with the laying out of East and West Broad Streets, features Oglethorpe never planned. In 1791, the newly incorporated city began expanding the town plan contrary to Oglethorpe's intentions, initiating the growth of the plan to 24 wards through six separate expansions by multiple civic leaders and multiple municipal engineers, each making various adjustments to the plan. The result is a multi-authored plan, which is why we call it the Savannah Plan, with 13 different ward variations, all using Oglethorpe's tithings, trust lots, squares, and streets, but resulting in these 13 variations, as well as eight different sizes of squares. All this to say, as well as adding new features that Oglethorpe never planned, South Broad Street and Liberty Streets at almost double the width of any street planned by Oglethorpe, and introducing to American urbanism a new feature, the tree-lined median. These ward variations involving squeezing, stretching, and truncating wards and adjusting the sizes of lots, streets, and squares within the plan. The architectural result of these many adaptations to Oglethorpe's original planning module is what we call in our book elastic urbanism. The genius of Savannah's built environment since the 18th century has been the nimble adaptation of how buildings fit within the plan. The use of truss lots for private residences beginning in the 18th century, as against Oglethorpe's rule that they used exclusively for public buildings, such as the Pink House, is an early example of diverging from Oglethorpe's intentions. While Oglethorpe intended houses on tithing lots to face only the east-west narrow civic streets, early on, buildings shifted their orientation to grander and wider central north-south civic streets like Barnard. Scores of buildings in downtown, and you heard the exact number, follow this pattern, including rear buildings behind a building facing an east-west street.
Dr. Williams, we're 3 minutes.
Okay. 15 more seconds?
No, okay. I'll okay. Let you go over a little bit.
Okay. Thank you. And just to say that this pattern fits within a long tradition of the city. Thank you.
Ma'am.
So my name is Laura Lawton, and I was born in Savannah and grew up here. My parents were born in Savannah and grandparents, great-grandparents. So I'm interested in the historic district, even though I live outside of the historic district. And I just think the fact that we have been designated a national landmark, and I know we've done things in the past that have threatened our landmark status, but I would just hate to see us do one more. So that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other members of the public in the back there?
Ryan Charles, Director of Preservation and Historic Properties for Historic Savannah Foundation.
I'll just start quickly with one comment about what Ms. Nagel said. HSF, since 1955 as an organization, has never been paid to come speak at these meetings. I will keep my comments brief because we have been in this room many times regarding this project, and as many times as we have to, we will continue to do so. But like I said, I will keep them brief. We are lucky to have a local historic district ordinance, which places historic context, like we've all been talking about, at an extremely high level when looking at changes to historic buildings, as well as when looking at new construction. The reason that it is so important when constructing a new building within any historically significant community, of which we live in one of the most important, I would agree, that whatever the new construction may be fits within its surrounding historic context. Historic Savannah Foundation, as well as many experts in the field of preservation with very specific knowledge of General Oglethorpe's original plan for the city and how it has adapted over time, agree that the special exception was appropriately addressed, specifically when referring to the historic context, which is required to be thoughtfully considered when proposing a new construction project. The special exception was received for this, that was received for this project was made appropriately, legally, and without causing due harm to the surrounding historic context, the closest historic context of which we've all seen, and one that has the exact same condition, is located immediately next door at 344 Barnard Street, which is a contributing building within the local historic district. And then I just want to add two more quick things. Specifically referring to 344 Barnard Street, I would like to add that if we do, as an organization, have a fear that if entities such as yourself or other boards go against the historic context and state that entrances facing a north-south street are inappropriate, then what happens if buildings such as 344 Barnard Street were to burn down? Would these people then lose their property rights to reconstruct their home on that lot? And as we have stated before, we are actively interacting with the National Park Service. We have never gained fear over this project interfering with our landmark status through those conversations with the National Park Service. And I do believe the letter says that they are simply considering projects like these in that process to determine if they are inappropriate, which they have not given a strict determination on this project. So we have not heard anything about that. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any other members of the public wish to speak?
I'm going to try my best to go through this quickly because I know that I only have 3 minutes. Good afternoon. My name is Ellie Isaacs, and I'm the chair of the Historic District Board of Review. I appreciate your time and volunteer service on this board. I am here today as the representative for HDBR to defend the previous decisions that the board has made on three separate occasions to approve this project for construction. We believe we have applied the zoning ordinance standards properly in terms of the Secretary of Interior Preservation standards, the design standards, and visual compatibility factors of the surrounding area in which the proposed project is located. Please keep in mind that visual compatibility is not a factor that is ever up for appeal. However, was a key consideration in the approval of this project. And before I begin to nullify all the previously accused erroneous decisions, there are many statements that have been made that need to be addressed before I can move forward. Although the statements that have been made are not up for debate today, I would be remiss without addressing them and including them in the record. I'll admit that today I am filled with righteous indignation for the slander and misinformation that has been used to describe the actions and previous decisions of the HDBR, our board members, and against me personally. Simply because the decisions that were made were disagreed with from members of the public. Being accused of going rogue, not respecting and even disdaining the landmark district and the ordinance, being unable to perform and even abandoning our duties, using our positions to advance our personal anti-preservation agendas, and being personally disgustingly misquoted, as you guys have already heard today, yet again, being verbally attacked by slandering my name, my integrity, and professional reputation, being called into question by false accusations is not acceptable or professional behavior. It is wholly inappropriate and untrue. The local preservation community knows that I have spent my career dedicated to preservation. They know that my integrity and essence of the goal is to protect the vital historic assets, both tangible and intangible, of not only this beautiful city in which we all live, but the state as well. Select members of the public and the petitioner clearly have little to no knowledge as to what I, as chair, have accomplished professionally in order to be voted as chair and reelected recently again as chair by my peers. Also, contrary to the petitioner's belief, personal views are never used as a basis for decision. If any personal views or conflict of interest is detected, those members recuse themselves from any agenda, from the agenda item altogether. A conflict of interest in board actions includes property interest, family interest, financial interest, or family financial interest, in which no one on the board has met this criteria. The assertion that the HDBR has a disdain for the landmark designation is not only insulting, but incorrect. Each volunteer, again, volunteer, not paid, member of the HDBR applied for and was appointed to the board by the mayor and city council, just as all of you, in order to maintain and preserve the integrity of the district. To my knowledge, none of us have ever expressed the desire to alter the designation, but rather work to reverse the decision made by the NPS to no longer be considered threatened.
We're past the three-minute mark, ma'am. We got to stick to that. Like, I got to let everybody else come back up and speak again, and we can't do that. Any other members of the public would like to speak? I got one more.
Get my presentation. How does this work?
What would that be?
I mailed it in earlier today.
Earlier today?
Yeah.
Let's be silent while we're getting ready.
That were submitted.
I emailed it to Mr. Larson. I changed it a bit. Well,
he needs to go back to his office to
okay
to repost
so it. Wait for somebody else.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Nobody else wants to talk with us. You can read my speech.
Are there any other members of the public that want to speak while this man's getting his presentation ready? Okay.
I'll go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you for considering this appeal. My name is Jim Hansrucker, and I am president of the Forsyth Park Community Alliance. I am asking you to remand this decision back to the HDBR for the simple reason that some members of the HDBR fail to base their decision for a special exception on the criteria of the ordinance. Instead, they were swayed by aspects that are not present in the criteria of the ordinance. Even their dear professor of architectural history, excuse me one second. Dear professor of architectural history professed that he could attest to the spirit of the Oglethorpe plan, but he cannot attest to the ordinance.
It is my opinion that this project is fully compatible with the plan in spirit. I can't speak to the ordinances.
The ordinances are the laws written to protect and instruct on how to protect the Oglethorpe plan. There's no reference in the ordinances to giving special exceptions for a precedent or for failure to understand the ordinances. To represent some key points of what was presented to the HDBR, I present to you one of the criteria that they were to consider, the public interest. The HDBR was made aware of an online petition that now has over 500 signatures. This online petition is in opposition of the special exception and had a broad appeal. Not only Savannians signed the petition has been signed by people all around the world. I expect the Zoning Board of Appeals read the letters and comments sent to the MPC in preparation for this appeal. The letters that favored the opposition over the special exception were in a ratio of 3-1. One of the letters was from John Barrett. On the display at the Georgia Historical Society, there are over 30 international versions of the book, which shows Savannah's international reach. You will be grateful to know that there is even can I go to 7 or 8? That one. You would be happy to know that even a South Korean version of the book If you are now, there is even a South Korean version of the book if you are now brushing up on your South Korean. Savannah's Oglethorpe Plan is internationally recognized. The landmark status is to be protected and mandated by, as mandated by the people in support of the public interest. The landmark designation is a national designation given by the federal government. Your ruling today is a review of how the criteria of the ordinance has followed, was followed by the HDBR. The people have spoken in favor of protecting the Oglethorpe Plan by denying this special exception. Thank you for your time and the support matter. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chairman, I was informed that I didn't use, I think, 2.5 minutes of my 10.
Then I'll have to respond as well.
I think that we've heard all the testimony from both sides that we need to hear. Any other members of the public wish to speak? All right, we're going to enter into board discussion, and if y'all have questions for anyone, we'll allow that. I've got a few questions to start with. And one, Leah, if you would, I know that some of the board members might not be up on the historic ordinance as much as others, and could you please explain briefly the difference in a tithing lot, what a tithing lot is and what a trust lot is? Could you do that for us?
I certainly can.
I know that.
it's in the ordinance.
Is that original map that was up here? Do you have that map? The map that was in when I that was. And while we're trying to find a map to explain it to you, so the lots are centered around a square, if you can picture our square. And the larger lots that are to the east and west of the squares are called trust lots. They're one large lot. To the north and south are 40 tithing lots. And those historically were oriented, they faced long way north and south. And they faced east and west streets and were dedicated strictly by Oglethorpe for residential use originally. And then the trust lots were dedicated by Oglethorpe for civic use originally when he, and altogether those trust lots and tithing blocks and square made a ward. Is that what you're looking for?
I just wanted to make sure everybody understands that. And I feel like the map would, if
yeah,
you get that pulled up, would be a great way of showing that. No, ma'am. We're only hearing from staff.
You have anything in that would show that? We're just trying to find an image.
Any of the pictures would do.
The internet. I can't get on the internet. That's
we can't get on the internet for some reason. I know. That's why.
If it's that.
Our internet's down.
Try joining the Wi-Fi rather than using the LAN network. It says Wi-Fi is available. Let's see.
Oh, sir.
Mark.
Yeah.
Yes. He's appealing the special exception that was given to allow the board to face the only reason we can overturn this if we think simply made a mistake, whether they applied the criteria wrong in giving the special exception. Right. Yes. Which is one, the special exception hinges upon it being on a tabbing lot. So I know that it is. She told me much. I don't even know Mr. Turner. I figured you might know. Yeah. I don't know if Mr. Bob knows or not. Because we've been to this thing three times.
Well, maybe while they're working on the internet, we can hear. Yeah, because I've got a couple of more questions. One for Mr. Satil. You gave a lot of examples of entrances facing the north-south streets on Barnard. How many of those are connected with tithing lots, and how many of them are not? I'm just curious personally. Okay.
Here we go.
Okay.
Here, this is what we were trying to show you. All right, so this is a ward, and these large lots are trust lots, and these long, thin lots are tithing lots. So what we're talking about here is a tithing block was divided into 10 tithing lots, and the long way here facing East-West Street. So this tithing lot in particular would be an end one like this. Does that help?
Do you see what she's talking about? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
All right. And then my other question, Mrs. Leto, could you pull up and show us the criteria for the special exception that was granted? Okay.
I'll just go to the right here. Yeah. I'm the one where the skin of cat. Oh, you said February. You said that.
On the screen is the action by the Zoning Board of Appeals and the purview of the Zoning Board of Appeals for you to review prior to making your votes.
Okay. All right. Entering into board discussion, Mr. Plunk, do you have any questions for staff or applicant? Or
no questions. If we're in board discussion, I've kind of a comment. We can see if anyone has questions first.
Mrs. Jones, do you have any questions you'd like to ask anybody? Okay. Mr. Condon, you got to turn your mic on.
Ms. Leto, could I ask you a question? There's been a lot of discussion here about 130-plus tithing lots that face in one direction or the other. And one party is of the opinion that maybe a very small portion of those are actually entrances. And one party is of the opinion that they're all entrances, or the vast majority of them, let's say, are entrances. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about right now?
Yes.
Okay. What is the position of MPC staff on that particular point? Because I think it's a very valid point. One guy's argument is so far off the other guy's, it's just, it's very confusing.
Yeah, I would say more of a question with the...
Thank you. Leah, if you could help us with that, that would be great.
So, could you repeat the question, please?
Certainly. In Mr. Jones' argument, the 130-plus tithing lot references that were used as part of the decision-making process by the historic board, he is of the opinion that the vast majority of those are incorrect.
Oh, okay.
He's, if I understand Mr. Jones's argument, and I'll give you a chance to answer, Mr. Jones, don't worry. The, if I understand his argument, that a small percentage of those referenced are actually entrances on
primary
entrances. Thank you. Thank you. What is your opinion? In the MPC's opinion of that?
Well, it was this department that did this. You know, it was the Historic Preservation Department that did that research. So, I mean, I would hope that we stand by that research. So
I would just like you to make a statement that you stand by the research if you do.
Yeah. Yep.
Mr. Jones, if I may ask you a question, please, sir.
May I respond?
No, but you can answer.
You can answer my question.
You can only answer his question.
Yep. What was the basis for your assertion that of the 130 plus, that only a handful of them are appropriate?
I cited the ordinance. I cited the definition of primary facade, which incorporates the primary entrance, and that definition says that the primary facade must be consistent with the majority of primary facades of contributing buildings. And I stand by Leah's document fully. Contributing buildings in the visually related historic context, and I refer to the definition of visually related in section 13.5 of the ordinance, which says it's just the buildings within view of the subject property. So her map is completely accurate, and I stand by her map fully. But from the subject property, you can only see one. That's all you can see, just one. I don't think that she would disagree with that. I think her map is completely accurate. And I stand by the MPC's map. I stand by the MPC's categorization of contributing and non-contributing buildings. And when you look at the MPC's map and their study, it's 33-1, the majority. And you're required under 3.236 here, you must follow the ordinance, interpret the ordinance
Mr. Jones,
in plain language.
Thank you. So, in your opinion, of the 130 some odd, how many of them are incorrectly described as primary residence?
I have not reviewed all 130. I am under the assumption that they are completely accurate, but only one.
My point is that it seems unlikely that of the 130 buildings that are referenced, that the vast majority of them do not have primary primary entrances facing the, as you want to describe it, the incorrect position, if you will. And so I think that one of the most important parts of your argument has to be if you believe that the city erred in their description and the information that they gathered, I think it's vitally important that you have more than four or five reference points as to where they're wrong.
They are wrong not in that map, but they are wrong in that they were required to make a finding that the location of the primary entrance was not was in conformance with the ordinance, with all the provisions of the ordinance. They did not do so. I cited a provision of the ordinance that governs the orientation of buildings. And that provision, the definition of primary facade in 13.5, has a very specific test. They didn't meet the test. Therefore, if you allow a primary entrance, you're allowing a primary facade that is not in conformance with the ordinance. That's criteria one. Criteria one is you've got to prove, as the review board must prove that it's in conformance with the ordinance, and they cannot prove that and did not prove that, did not address the topic.
Isn't it the purview of a board to take into consideration exceptions? Isn't that what we exist for?
There's a criteria for the exception. You don't just grant exceptions based upon an argument that somebody comes up with, even if it's a meritorious argument, because there's a strict criteria.
Don't you think that the city coming up with 130 examples of something is a basis?
No, it doesn't play into the criteria. Can we go back up to the criteria? And this is what's so significant.
You've answered my question.
Testimony.
You've answered my question. You've answered my question. Thank you very much, Mr. Jones.
Mr. Turner, do you have anything you'd like to ask? Anyone?
No questions at this time.
Okay, thank you. So, Mr. Plunk, do you have any comments?
Yeah, I want to make sure I'm just on the same page as the chairman and as far as the purview of what we're about to decide, which is that, in my understanding, it is not up to our board to make a ruling on whether or not to grant or deny a special exception. We are here now to decide, did the board that has the authority to grant, the board that has that authority granted a special exception. We're here to determine, did they make a serious mistake, based on some kind of evidence we've seen, or has new evidence emerged? Has something new come to light between now and then? I always try to defer to the board, which has authority, unless, I've heard a lot of arguments today that relate to whether that convince me, the ordinance is a good idea, that convince me that, why the exception should or should not, but what we need to take into account, if I'm correct, and that's why I want to get your thoughts on this. Did they make some kind of mistake? So when they were playing, recordings of statements by the board members, those are, more directly related to whether there was an error or, a miscarriage of justice, or whether something new has come to light. Is that correct? That, that's where we need to keep our focus on in the decision we're about to make?
The ordinance says that those primary entrances must face the east-west streets. They have been granted a special exception to allow it to face the north-south street, and the review board went over to criteria and granted this. Mr. Jones is saying that they did this in error, and it did not meet the criteria, the majority test, and the streets, it didn't conform with the ordinance on the streets and lanes.
Right.
And that's why he's appealing.
Right.
And we are to determine whether or not they made
error
in granting the special exception. And if they did make some determination, to overturn
that. So we're on the same page.
Yes. Marcus, do you have anything you want to add?
I just wanted to ask the board, did you want me to pull up the criteria by which the
yes.
You had asked for
the HBC because I think the one that Mrs. Leto pulled up wasn't exactly the one I was asking for.
So this is the section 3.12.7, the review criteria for special exceptions. They're A and B, which are the criteria that are at hand for the board, for the HBC, the review board to make a determination about it regarding a special exception.
And there is no C, it's just the A and B, correct?
Yeah, there's a staff comment beyond that.
And can you speak as to what the goals, policies, and objective of the comprehensive plan are in relation to the location of primary entrances on tithing lots?
You're referring to Section A?
Yes.
And I'll just, for the record, I'll just read the criteria into the record and I'll answer your question. Whether the use for which the special exception is being considered could be located, operated, and maintained in a manner in conformance with the goals, policies, and objectives of the comprehensive plan and the provisions of this ordinance. I think and it's a broad sort of way to look at this, but this is kind of the intent of the comprehensive plan, is to support and uphold ordinances, whether it be a zoning ordinance, subdivision regulations, historic overlays, those kinds of things. So it would be my position that the comprehensive plan doesn't speak specifically to the location of doors, as an example, for what we're talking about today, but it is in place to uphold the rules of those ordinances that are more regulatory than the comprehensive plan is. Comprehensive plan is more of a guideline.
Which in this case would be the ordinance that says that the primary entrance on a tithing lot shall face the east-west streets, correct?
Right. And then there's this process by which the board can consider a special exception based on these criteria.
Okay. All right. Mr. Plunk, do you have any other comment?
No, only that, you know, I just tend to defer to the board, which has the authority to make this decision, you know, unless some kind of serious miscarriage was presented before us here today, is my feeling on it.
Mr. Jones, do you have any comments?
No, not at this time. Okay.
Mr. Turner? So if there's no other board discussion, would somebody like to take a stab at it?
I'll motion that we reject petitioner's request, deny petitioner's request.
Mr. Plunk has made a motion to deny the petitioner's request. That's it.
Paul, in full.
In full. Yeah. Okay. Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Condon. Is there any discussion on the motion?
So I'll only add that the point that was made that this will probably all likely be bundled in a superior court. Anyways, it was well taken. I think, you know, this will all kind of end up in the same place at this point.
And you feel, and this is a discussion on the motion that,
right,
that he did not prove that there was a false application.
Correct. The burden of proof in this case on the appellant.
Okay. If there's no other discussion on the motion, Mr. Plunk, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Mrs. Jones?
Yes.
Okay, the motion passes and the appeal is denied. Being no further business before us, this meeting is adjourned. No.